This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tolfe, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. It's a wet one out there this morning. Raining. It's NHL draft day, first round. TSN 1290 live from the draft in Chi-Town, Chicago. My kind of town. Afternoon coverage begins at 3 with the afternoon ride with Hustler, Ezzy will be there as well from the Illegal Curve, and Mr. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets. Extensive coverage on that and throughout the day, including right here on the Big Show, and of course with Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Roundtable as well. We'll get all over the draft, all over the Jets. Kevin Cheveldayoff spoke yesterday extensively for about 20 minutes prior to the draft, and then he spent about 9 minutes with Hustler and Paul Edmonds. We'll run that for you this morning at the bottom of the hour. We'll delve into that. Of course, the CFL kicked off, the Blue Jays, the NBA draft. My Sixers have a team. They've got enough players for a team, and they might not trade them. Well, depends if one of them wins Rookie of the Year, then they like to trade those guys.
Trust the process,
win
man.
Win Rookie of the Year. Trust the process. I've been trusting it for a long, long time. Jim Tolfe, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. How are we, gentlemen?
Not too bad. And enough of this. Can we have a couple of weeks of sunshine, please? We're about due for that, right? So enough of this crap. It was nice watching some CFL football last night, man. Just kind of felt good. And yeah, that game was just another game, wasn't it, Darian? You're jumping around like you just won a playoff game, like a five-year-old kid after you went kicking him off the field the way you were.
Jumping around like your son went second overall to the Lakers.
As he's about to fight Chris Jones and the rest of the Riders on the bench, right?
Yeah. Just another game.
Mm-hmm. I liked it. We'll delve into that game a bit, too. And, of course, Bombers. Darren Bombers is going to join us. Matt Cause, Adam Kimmelman from NHL.com. But we'll start with draft day, gentlemen. It is draft day. Dave Tippett and the Phoenix Coyotes have decided to part ways. We'll get into that as well. And Jordan Eberle goes to the New York Islanders in a big trade yesterday, bringing Mr. Strome the other way to Oil City. Strome makes just under a little over two, and Jordan Eberle, of course, at 6. Oilers are calling it a cash dump. Islanders are calling it, we got a very good player for a player who is underperforming. What are your thoughts on that trade?
Well, there's certainly the underlying things here of what Jordan Eberle is capable and what Ryan Strome has accomplished so far. It looks similar to the Larson Hall trade, right? That's the big thing on Twitter yesterday, really. For Shirelli to be dealing with that. But it will be a lot of fun to watch to see what Ryan Strome can accomplish alongside McDavid. You would think he would jump up to be a 20-plus goal scorer in a hurry, most likely. I always look at it, guys, and I know the analytics, they just go man-to-man or woman-to-woman and just talk about the stats. But sometimes moves need to be made. And a cash dump, yeah, sure, but is this more about culture change ultimately, and sort of the Oilers almost bleeding themselves of and getting rid of those that were there kind of before the arrival of McDavid? I still wonder that big time with Eberle, with how long that the rumor is that he's been on the block sort of to get traded, with how long that's existed, and for us just to accept this as a simple cash dump, to me, I just refuse to believe that. There's more to this. I think this is about chemistry and things going on inside that room, I believe, and I think ultimately it makes the Oilers probably better.
Yeah, does it make them better? It could. I mean, Ryan Strome did have a 50-point season in the NHL at a pretty young age, so it's not like it's a trade for this grindy third line center where kind of the old school just winners faceoffs and kill penalties type of guy. Like, there is the potential for him to be something a little bit more than that. But Peter Chiarelli has one hell of an odd fascination with trading talented players and trading the best player in the trade and getting underwhelming returns. Like it goes back to when he was in Boston, and it's really peculiar that he's been like this for years, and it's a number of players, and it's a trade that can work out. I don't think it's the worst trade he's ever made, but to me, there's no doubt that the Islanders are getting the better player in this trade, and I think it's going to work out very well for them, especially if he's put next to John Tavares. And the two have shown some chemistry between them before. But, yeah, I just... If I'm an Oilers fan, I'm not so sure about Peter Chiarelli and the direction he's taking this team in. I know they had the big turnaround last year, but a number of head-scratching moves. And if the cap dump was to allow you to sign Chris Russell to a four-year deal worth over $4 million and apparently a full no-movement clause... If that's part of the acquisition, then to me the trade is a big-time loss.
Well, you can't ignore the money, though. You can't ignore, as he said yesterday, that Leon Draisaitl, who is still on an entry-level deal, and Connor McDavid, who is still on an entry-level deal, need massive raises. To me, gentlemen, this is sort of when we always equate things to the Jets. If you re-up Brian Little, this is my point about Matthew Perreault or somebody that's making $4-plus million a year. You've got Trouba coming. You've got Morrissey. I understand that Eberle was awful in the playoffs. I understand that they wanted to maybe make a change to what you're talking about, Troy, in the room, and just with his overall leadership for a couple of years now. But that's $6 million for a guy who's going to be an unrestricted to go to a guy who is an RFA who doesn't have very big numbers, and the fact that you literally are... I mean, Ryan Rashog, the TSN reporter, was on the afternoon ride yesterday, and he was talking that the new NHL deal is going to be 5 years, with the few exceptions of the Connor McDavids. And he said, Connor McDavid, are you going to say no to $12 million a year?
You mean the new norm is going to be 5 years?
The new norm is going to be 5 years. And his point was the deals for Taves and Kane in Chicago are killing the Blackhawks and going to kill the Blackhawks at 10 per. The new deal will be 5 years and probably about, for stars, $8 million a year.
I don't believe that for a second. You're going to tell me that we're going to see the GMs collectively pull the reins back to lessen the term to 5 years for
not the GMs.
Big-time players.
His point was the players. His next contract at 5 years will take him to about 27, 28 years old, where he's guaranteed unrestricted free agency. So if you're Connor McDavid, why would you sign longer than 5 years?
Okay, now that I agree with. So that you come and you're renegotiating at 28 for a mass, that's where you get your 8 year.
Yeah, and his point was, if you're his agent or Connor McDavid, that's all I'm signing, 5 years. Yeah. And if you're signing 5 years and you're Connor McDavid, you're looking at, are you going to take $8 million a year? Who knows? But you're looking at probably 10 to 12, like a Taver Kane's deal. So his point is just that it's got to fit somehow. And then you throw in Leon Draisaitl, and if he continues, there is a big cap management to this.
But they've been trying to trade him for 3 years now. Right, so this isn't just a...
Yeah.
I understand the cap aspect and element
came
of it.
In, yeah.
But it's been, I think even before that, there was always the talk of moving those guys, right, before Chiarelli showed up. So I understand the salary cap implications here, but I think that there is ultimately more to this than simply that as far as things in the room and that sort of thing.
If Jordan Eberle, who in the regular season last year had 51 points and 20 goals, he's had 20 goals or more for 4 years in a row, 28, 24, 25, 20. If he shows up in the playoffs and puts up some points, does this deal happen?
I don't think so.
Really? Because to Troy's point, it probably still does.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it does.
Say the money. And they maybe get a little bit more for him, but they say, we got enough for him, and the money isn't going
to
fit.
Yeah, but I find it hard to believe that if he goes in 13 games, says 7 goals, 6 assists, and is a point a game in the playoffs, that Edmonton is going, okay, we need to salary cap dump this player who was one of our stars in the postseason. I think this had a huge thing to do with the deal.
Especially when you expect to go to the playoffs again.
Yeah.
Because of struggle of over 13 games?
I think so. I think it was kind of a 50-50 thing where everything you guys said prior to the postseason was true. Trying to move him, you do have to kind of maneuver your way through the cap nowadays. But I think compiled on top of that, if he has a big playoff run, I find it very, very hard to believe that they do end up moving him. And the reason I don't totally think it's a salary cap dump is you're basically coming out even now that you're signing Chris Russell and having Strome's salary involved in this. And if Strome has a big year this year, you know, as an RFA, you're talking about a guy that's going to get a big raise into maybe $4 or $5 million a year, which is, like, I just don't think it's really a salary cap decision when, I mean, maybe for one particular season it is, but that's pretty short-sighted to make a cap decision like that when it'll probably end up costing you even more going into the next season.
Well, and I guess what I'm trying to say is it a combination? Is it all factors weighing into this? And one of the factors could be more than the other, but you put them all together, the lack of playoff performance, the $6 million per, the losing your spot on the number one line with Connor McDavid, who just won the most valuable player of the league and scored 100 points, and you couldn't play on that line. And then the fact that they do need to sign Russell, regardless of his numbers, you do need to bring back another D-man. That is still one of your weakest spots on your team. And the fact that you have some big contracts coming up, I think that it's not like... I think those are all factors that weighed into this. I think maybe some, like the room or whatever, the salary cap, maybe weighed in more than the other, but I think you put them all together, and it was a deal that he had to go.
I would agree with that from all the different aspects and angles. And a guy that's been on the block for the last couple of years, I would agree with that. It's almost like there was a same way golfers, you have who's the best golfer that hasn't won a major. It's like these upper-end players that have been on the trading block for years now, like him and Duchesne right now. And you see, it looks like they're both poised to go after Eberle does go. It looks like Duchesne's going to follow pretty soon. But I agree that there's a number of contributing factors to come in that finally pushed him out of Edmonton.
Yeah, and I just don't think salary cap's one of them. I think it's a guy that doesn't fit Peter Chiarelli's mold of a forward, of what he likes on offense, because you got Patrick Maroon that he acquired, which is a good trade. Milan Lucic, who he signed, which is, I mean, you want to talk about salary dumps. What was it, 30 games in, that is one of the worst contracts in the NHL. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's a combination of smaller skilled guy, Chiarelli opts more for size on the wings, and combined with the fact that he had a poor playoffs, and combined with the fact that I can kind of understand the whole culture change thing where whoever was poisoned by the McTavish and Lowe and all those guys regime, like, I understand wanting to move on from that a little bit. I think the return was a little bit underwhelming, to be honest.
Well, that's the other question. Like, they have been trying to trade him and all that. Did they get enough for him? Because I think, Jordan, you go 4 years scoring 20 goals, including getting taken off the number one line and taken away from Connor McDavid, and basically being called out in the media from your head coach in the playoffs, but still have 20 goals. Like, is this enough for him? Because Ryan Strome is, I know he knows McDavid. His brother's good friends with McDavid. He comes over to his house all the time. But this guy had 30 points last year in 69 games, 13 goals. Last year, he had 28 points, 8 goals, and also was sent down to the minors for 8 games.
I don't think it is a question. When something exists and everybody's making the same statement, it's not a question. Everyone knows he didn't get enough for him. That's the thing. Everyone's saying the same thing, but for whatever, Chiarelli is comfortable with that. And if I kind, there's something about it that I kind of like, where if he, instead of going forward in a situation that can be uncomfortable for the organization or not the best sort of fit in his mind, he is willing to eat that a little bit to get either the guy he wants in what he did with Larson, or the situation that he wants in this move with Strome. There's something I like about that, instead of going forward with an individual that you don't think quite meshes or that you ideally don't want from his perspective. So I think it's fascinating the way he makes these, like you talk about provocative moves. He's pretty ballsy in the moves that he pulls off.
Yeah. Are they successful? That's the next debate. And I worry a little bit that, like, if I'm an Oilers fan, I worry a little bit about Chiarelli kind of wasting Connor McDavid. I worry a little bit about that because he just makes some moves where you lose too much talent, and that kind of worries me. And I wouldn't be surprised at all for Jordan Eberle, who shot 5% below his career average last year, to break 60 points pretty easily with the Islanders. And I think for the Oilers, the Oilers can't worry about Eberle's production. They just need to hope and pray that Ryan Strome gets somewhere above 40 points. And then that deal can kind of start to tilt a little bit more towards break even between the two teams.
If you're a Jets fan, this is eerily similar to what you're going to face. And Leon Draisaitl is a RFA, needs a contract, and Connor McDavid's on an entry-level one. Is this not Patrick Laine and Nick Ehlers coming up? Same situation? Like, what are you going to give Connor McDavid? And he's going to probably only want 5 years. They're probably going to try and get him for 8, as they should. And the owner's going to sit there and go, give him whatever. I make money off Connor McDavid. You know, make sure you lock him up. But Shirelli's got to balance this. And you look at, like, what's Laine going to get? And what's Nick Ehlers going to get?
Yeah, and I think that's why there's so much emphasis on what the Jets do here in the very short-term future, right? Like, this is why they need to make hay this upcoming season before all these considerably larger contracts kick in. That's why the window is so small here for this specific group.
You add in a Trouba and a Morrissey, and you see what Chris Russell's going to get, and you think,
Chris Russell thing, like, come on. They're giving him, what's the rumor that?
I saw either 4 by 16 or 4 by 18 with a full no move clause.
It's truly mind-blowing.
Doesn't help.
The best shot blocker in the league.
Doesn't help the Jets. And I like Chris Russell as a D-man. I'm not as down on him as much
as a third-pairing guy, he's fine.
But, yeah, I'm not as high on him as a, like, I think he's a $3 million a year guy. I think he's earned that in this day and age. But it does no favors for the Jets, who have a Jacob Trouba coming up, who have a Josh Morrissey coming up, and then you throw in the same as the Connor McDavid and the Leon Draisaitl with the Ehlers and the Patrick Laine. It's really interesting. We'll maybe delve into this a little bit more as well. We're going to hear from Kevin Cheveldayoff, who was on the afternoon ride yesterday. We'll do that at 6:30. Up next, we'll delve into the start of the CFL season on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290, we'd like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. You can nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. And we here on The Big Show will showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Kevin Cheveldayoff's conversation with Hustler and Paul Edmonds from yesterday's afternoon ride prior to the start of tonight's National Hockey League draft coming up in our next segment. Schedule came out yesterday, gentlemen, for the Winnipeg Jets. They, of course, start at home against the Toronto Maple Leafs on October 4th. Their first road game is that Saturday on the 7th in Calgary versus the Flames. And they go to Vegas for the first time on November 10th. They come back for a pair of games against Vegas on December 1st and February 1st. And the fourth annual Winnipeg Jets Fan Fest will take place over 2 days this year. They're expanding it from one day, September 15th and 16th at MTS Iceplex. Yesterday, the schedule came out, and people right away, when they saw that the first Jets game in Vegas is November 10th, went online and said, oh, look at flights or whatever. They did whatever, texted somebody or talked to their spouse, whatever. Turned back within minutes, flights went up $300 and $350 to Vegas on that time frame around cashing in on the Jets fans wanting to go to Vegas. The other thing that stood out to me yesterday was Paul Edmonds talking about the schedule, and he said they play in Dallas on November 6th, and their next game is until the 10th in Vegas. And he said, I wonder if we'll be staying in Dallas for a few days as opposed to heading to Vegas and waiting for the game well on that road trip. interesting stuff around the schedule. We'll delve into it a little bit more. CFL kicked off last night. We talked about it briefly. Montreal and Darren Durant beat the Saskatchewan Roughriders at 17-16. Durant had a couple of touchdowns, over 200 yards. Kevin Glenn looked good. What do you think of the game?
I thought Saskatchewan looked pretty good, and which is of concern, right? We had Chris Schultz come on yesterday, said that he expects Saskatchewan to win between 7 and 10 games, and if that comes to fruition, that gets pretty congested in a hurry in the West. So what I saw last night just sort of reinforces how difficult the West is going to be this year to me, a game that they should have won. I don't understand the end of the game at all there. They've got the ball deep in Montreal's zone with 37 seconds left, and they basically, from that point on, settle for a couple of sneaks to grab a first down and then run the ball to the middle of the field, gaining no yards, and leave their guy with a 45-yard field goal attempt where you picked up 1 yard from the 37 seconds left in the game. You can run easily. You got all kinds of time there to run a number of plays and pick up 10 more yards to make it a 35-yard field goal, which is exponentially more comfortable than a 45-yarder. And I wonder if Crapinha asked for them to run the ball to the middle of the field. I heard Suter talk about it on the broadcast. I used to hate it. Like, I don't want the ball in the middle of the field. You don't kick many field goals from the middle like that. Keep it on a hash mark where you're used to kicking the ball. You know, you only kick extra points if you choose to do so from the middle of the field. I didn't like that, and it was ridiculous how they didn't go get Crapinha some more room with that much time left. They peed that one down their legs. But all in all, quite a entertaining game.
Coaching,
which is perfect. could that have ended any perfectly for Bombers fans going into Saskatchewan for week two? Because we talked about it. What's the leash for Chris Jones early in the season? He lost him that game in week one. There's no doubt about it. And Kevin Glenn, I mean, Kevin Glenn's specialty since he entered the CFL essentially is get the ball off quick on little slants, short little yardage pass plays, and that's when he is at his most effective and safest. So it blew my mind that Glenn, who was moving the ball pretty good near the end of the game, that you wouldn't run some sort of a quick slant to either Dembski, who had a monster game, or Roosevelt, or one of those big targets there. Just pick up another, like Troy said, 6, 7, 8. Maybe they break one and get you even closer. Chris Jones blew that game for Saskatchewan, and now it sets up for if the Bombers can go into Regina against what looked like a really improved defense in week one for Saskatchewan, but if they can pull out the win there, then that seat becomes lava hot for Chris Jones just 2 weeks into the season.
And what emphasizes that is their next two games are against Hamilton and Calgary when they're sitting 0-2. So that's a precarious, dangerous situation, yeah.
More in the CFL and the start of the season. The Bombers coming up at 8 o'clock when Darren Bombing joins us. But Kevin Cheveldayoff and his conversation on the afternoon ride from yesterday coming up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go to the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming. The Big Show on TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, Kevin Cheveldayoff, joined the afternoon ride yesterday with Paul Edmonds and Hustler.
How are you feeling today after last night?
Well, you know, finally get a chance to focus on the rest of the weekend and the rest of the summer, so to speak. It's one of those times where you're going to sit there, where were you when type of moments, I guess. Literally, the hockey world is standing still, at the beck and call of the Vegas Golden Knights.
Tell us about last night. I mean, I know many people were somewhat surprised when they saw a pending unrestricted free agent Chris Thorburn selected by Vegas. There had been so much talk about Toby Enstrom waiving his no-move clause and the potential pieces that might be going to Vegas. You ended up making a deal, moving back 11 spots in the first round and giving up a third-round pick to keep your roster and your prospect pool intact. How you feel about that deal, and if you can, tell us how it came together.
Sure. Well, you know, and in the end, you know, you feel comfortable with the decisions that you made because, you know, they were thought through. We talked to all aspects of our organization, the pro, the amateur. Obviously, it involved, you know, multi-facets of that. You know, again, the hardest part, I think, for every general manager, regardless of whether you understood you're only going to lose one player, that was the mantra that you heard from everybody, including myself, over the, you know, the period of time. You know, there's still that feeling of like, geez, I don't want to do this. I don't want to have to lose people. I don't want to have to, you know, try to reach out and find something else, you know, that, you know, could or could not even be a reality. So, every, you know, general manager had to look at their own roster, look at the decisions that they had to make. But I can't emphasize enough, you know, how this process really started. And the process really started was back when I went over to Europe and for the U18 World Championships and had a chance to, you know, to speak with Toby. You know, it wasn't face-to-face, but it was over the phone. And, you know, we laid out the realities of expansion and about the realities of what it potentially could mean, you know, if we have to stay and be a 4-4 hockey team going into the expansion draft scenario. And, you know, it was a couple of conversations with Toby, you know, a couple with his agent, but, you know, really in the end, and I can't put words in their mouths, you know, it was their decision to want to try, and Toby's decision especially, to want to try to not have us, you know, try to break apart what we've been trying to build, you know, piece by piece, brick by brick, you know, just for, you know, for something like this. So with him waving, it really set a whole different chain of events in motion.
Coming up 24 hours later now, looking back and assessing it, because of the way that unfolded, did the dominoes kind of fall in the right direction for you then?
Well, you know, again, from a standpoint of even how our deal ultimately played out, it hit, it certainly wasn't the deal that I was being offered or being talked about 24, 48, 72 hours before that. So it took a lot of grinding. It took a lot of, I don't know what the right word is, but it took some time to get to the point that we are. So, you know, again, we have the opportunity now to, you know, we have assets, whether we look to trade some of them to acquire others or that. It's back to normal. It's back to business as the National Hockey League knows it now.
You mentioned in the scrum earlier that you had talked to Vegas, obviously extensively, on a number of things. And we're working on a bigger deal and then realized that, I guess, in the short term, what was most important is to keep the group together, do what you had to do, and obviously there's still lots of things on the to-do list going into this weekend.
There's some unwritten stories and untold stories that'll probably never, ever come out, but
in your book.
Yeah, maybe in my book, but we worked long and hard on one real big deal. And, you know, for whatever reasons, that are uncontrollable at times that, you know, didn't come to fruition. But at some point, when it became apparent that, you know, the grand deal was not going to happen, you know, we shifted focus into the task at hand.
This was the first time you were through this as a general manager in the expansion process. So you'll probably be asked, and I don't imagine that it's going to change if another team does come in, but overall the process, and do you believe that, you know, it was fair to the 30 teams and then certainly fair to the 31st team that is Vegas?
Well, yeah, you know, at the end of the day, you put your league hat on and you say, well, they paid a lot of money to be part of this league. And you know, you certainly understand it. There's no point in getting angry at it, although, you know, got to admit, during the process, there's a few times where, you know, there are the few expletives, you know, get tossed out of the mouth and stuff like that. But it's an intense business. It really is. You know, it's about trying to win. You know, we had so many injuries last year during the year that we had so many players that we believe, you know, haven't hit their ceiling, you know, be it out for 40 games or 20 games at a time or, and when you have young players trying to make their mark in the National Hockey League, it's, you know, those points that they miss are big for them. That's hard. So, you know, we like the group of guys that we've assembled. We recognize we've got some, you know, room to improvement. We're going to, you know, be as diligent as available to us to try to plug those holes with, you know, whether it's through trades or whether it's through free agency, or whether it's, you know, our own players come in during training camp and surprise us. I'd rather it be that I have to, you know, let them surprise me and then, you know, try to back things out the other way, so to speak, as opposed to, banking on it. But we'll see how it all plays out.
Now, going into tomorrow, you still have a pick in the first round. It's a little bit later.
Yeah.
How do you characterize the draft when you've been talking with your scouting group? I know there'll be meetings going on, throughout right up until Friday. Is this a unique year in that maybe certainly from the draft experts we've talked to, there's no consensus whatsoever on players, really, from early in the first round to late in the first round? Does that make you maybe a little more comfortable about moving to where you are, considering the success you've had in and around that 13?
Well, there's going to, you know, you definitely have to be comfortable in your list. You have to be, you know, comfortable in what you think you might get. It could be a player that we're going to pick at that point that, you know, again, everyone's going to go, like, are you serious? Like, why did they have him there? But that's what really, you know, you're paying the scouts to do. You know, the Patrick Laine situation was there for us to screw up. Really, like, you're sitting there when you got that opportunity to pick that player. It's your fault if you don't, type thing. But when you start get down to 24 or, you know, into those kind of picks, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road for the scouts, in the sense that, there's lots of projection, and, you know, sometimes it's that little something that makes you say, yep, I'm going to take him. You know, some people might say, well, you know what, geez, they could have taken him here. But you learn in scouting that, if you want a guy at a point in time and he's there, you take him.
Based on your history and based on what you just said and the subjective nature of the fact that this could be all over the map and you could have a guy at 6 and he could be 26 on somebody else's list, do you anticipate more than any other year that there could be a lot more movement amongst your peers, even yourself?
I've had some conversations both ways where, some teams above us have said, you know, like, if our guy is not there, we have a cluster of guys. If he's not there, would you want to move down, and vice versa? And, it's, again, there's a lot of due diligence. You do your due diligence and get your house in order, your ducks in a row going into the drafts, because things happen very fast on the floor. Like, it seems like it drags on, you know, for everybody else. But, that 3-minute window between picks, you know, there's lots of things that, can and can't be discussed. The phone rings, you know, you're making split second decisions based on, you know, the work that's all done, you know, up to that point in time.
Focal point for tomorrow, I mean, at 24, unless there's some movement, is it any one position or standard best player available?
So, you know, like, the more you keep looking at it, the more you study it, you look at some of the great picks that were made, you know, over the course of time, and you say, man, that guy really developed, and in the scouts' minds, I'm sure it was probably the best player at the time, as opposed to, well, you know what, we have a deficit in this area, let's try and target that in the first round. And, you know, again, you know, generally speaking, in any draft, you know, there's a certain number of players where the talent stops and, you know, or the talent drops. And unless the spread between, you know, a position versus position is very, very, very close, you're going to draft the best player on the board.
General Manager of the Winnipeg Jets, Kevin Cheveldayoff, on the afternoon ride yesterday on TSN 1290. This is a big show on TSN 1290 as well. 43 minutes past the hour. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, your thoughts on some of those comments?
I really dig that he taps into the degree of the work of the scouts when you got a pick at 24. And hey, even like something like a 13, right? Like you said last year, the line A, there was some Puljujärvi talk, but by and large, things are pretty well mapped out. If you fell into similarly to this year with Hischier and Patrick, it's going to be one of those two, and then you just kind of go from there. But I love the inner workings of, you know, what's on your board compared to other boards that exist, and that's what I was saying yesterday, man. If there's one sports aspect entity that you could put trust in this province in which we live, the very most, it may well be the drafting that we're seeing right now out of the Winnipeg Jets. You have to put faith and trust in them. And I'm completely geeked to see who they pick at 24. I hope it's a guy that's like, who the hell, sort of thing, right? Similar to Scheifele, and you go look and you learn a little bit, and then 4 years down the road, everyone's looking their shoulder going, holy cow, is that a pick? That's what I hope it becomes.
Yeah, well, it's probably going to be that way. That's the Jets' MO, right? But I was very surprised. I mean, that whole interview, Chevy was very candid and like very, very un-Chevy-like. Which was kind of interesting to me.
I wonder a little bit if he's being affected by it. I'm sick and tired of hearing the quiet. I like that he got into some of the deals and how close. Like, you have no clue what's going on behind closed doors there, right? And how close he might get. But I've got a bunch of respect for their cone of silence. I think that's fantastic. They should have that. But it's also a good, maybe a good PR move on his part to give a little bit of a glimpse into, you know, you can have a bunch, they could have 3-4 real super close big time deals that just don't quite come to fruition, and he touches on that.
Which is what, that's all the fans want, is just a peek or a glimpse here and there. But I thought it was very interesting, that last answer about the whole best player available, or do you take the position in your organization that you need? Mm-hmm. I love his answer there. And for people that are screaming for left-handed defensemen with that number one pick, it could happen. Don't be surprised at all if it's a forward there. And you know what? I would love that pick if that's the case. If they go kind of against everything, and that would kind of truly signify that they are pure best player available. If, you know, when you have that one need in your organization where, like, it's pretty glaring, yet you still kind of go to almost a position of strength just because that prospect is the best skater that you see there on the board at that moment. A ton of respect for that. And that doesn't mean that for rounds 2 through 7 that you can't load up on left-handed defensemen. I know from experience Ron Hextall and the Flyers, you know, not necessarily their first-round pick is the pick of need. That's the best player available pick. But then after that, sure, load up. Grab a bunch of lottery tickets on left-handed defensemen, or just defensemen in general, and that kind of strategy usually lends you to hitting on hopefully at least one, maybe two of those guys. But if they go forward, I'll love the pick.
I wonder what the big deal was.
Oh, I know.
That they were working on, and when it got close to the witching hour, they're just like, okay, well, if this isn't going to happen, let's just make sure I protect my roster.
Especially when he's presenting it as a big, like, are you talking 6 guys involved? Or like, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to think it had to involve a no trade or a no move. Like, that was my first thought, that it involved one of the Vegas players, that maybe they had something in the works, but the player himself said, nah.
Well, this was the other comments that came out yesterday. He spoke with the media at 1:30. This was done at 3:30 on the afternoon ride. And some of his comments from his media scrum was just that. Like, he said they had some things on the go and in place, and contractually they didn't work out. And contractually, to me, is the reference to somebody needs to say yes or waive a something, and they don't do it. I don't think contractually, in the context he was given it in the media scrum, was referring to, like, the money or the fit or anything like that. You're not going to talk to a player who's making money that you can't fit into your cap. You are going to talk to players who are going to fit and that you want, or the representation. When it contractually doesn't work out, that's probably, are you willing to waive this and are you willing to come? And they're saying no. So then the deal sort of goes down there. And that's what we talked about earlier this week. I think it happens all the time. Very interesting stuff from Kevin Cheveldayoff yesterday on the afternoon ride. And we'll open the Boss Pizza fan line and get your thoughts on that starting at 9 o'clock. But up next, we'll delve into some of the other sports. The Jays. Oh, the Jays. And the NBA draft. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the 5th and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team celebrity September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more, order, register, visit tsn1290.ca. Matt Cause coming up at the top of the hour. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki on The Big Show. TSN 1290, 52 minutes past the opening hour. NBA draft last night, gentlemen. I didn't flinch as a Sixers fan. I was like, this is what, another move? Another player? This looks good. Sixers looking to trust the process. And we'll start, however, with Mr. Lonzo Ball going second to the Lakers, and then the proclamation from his father that Lakers will get in the playoffs his first year. Come talk to me when it happens. I'll have a hat that says, I told you so. What do you think of this? Like, the kid is literally sitting there watching his dad not only make this and put this pressure on him, and I know this has been going on for a while, but I thought he would let his son at least enjoy the draft. And who do they interview when he gets drafted six overall? His dad, not him.
And you see, but he does looks like it does look like the kid has fun with his dad and kind of standing off to the side and laughing as he's talking and all the rest of it. I can't stand the man. I can't. And when he comes on, I know that there's a long-held understanding that, you know, so long as you're loved or hated, that people are going to tune in to listen or watch and all that sort of thing. But the guy just talks. I don't know how he keeps his shirts clean with all the crap that comes out of his mouth, man. So I just want nothing to do with him. I dread the years upcoming with the Lakers where they start sticking microphones in front of his face nonstop. I think it's going to make me not like the Lakers at all after being as a kid with Magic and all the rest of it, always kind of having a soft spot in my heart. But the old man is too much for me. I want nothing to do with him, and I'm so sick and tired of listening to him.
Yeah, like, you're supposed to, I'm not a parent that I know of, and you're supposed to live.
Oh, wow.
You're supposed to live for your kid.
Wait a minute. Let's get into that.
I was about to lay down some serious parental knowledge there. You're supposed to live for your kid, not through him. And that's what bothers me about this whole thing. And you know what the worst part is? That Lonzo kid, he looks like a decent kid.
He does.
Like very well spoken. He's not brash, and he's not that that's necessarily wrong, but he just, like, he seems like the polar opposite.
Carries himself well.
Yeah, from his dad. And it just, I just feel uncomfortable, and it just sucks for him that he's got to put up. And I'm sure he's okay with it generally, or else you would think that maybe he would say something, although LeVar seems like the kind of guy that would just kind of brush that aside. But yeah, I agree. It sucks when the kid has as much talent as he does, and he looks like he's going to be a star in the league, and teams almost don't even want to deal with him. Or like, LA had to think about not taking him when it should have been an absolute no-brainer sprint up to the podium selection. But you have this just absolute moron who has this compulsive need to make everything about himself when, look, just one night of your child's life, make it about him, and he couldn't even do that for 30 seconds.
Just step back there, right? Like, you've done your job now.
Yeah.
Your boy got drafted second overall. Great job, Dad. Step back here. No.
Yeah, and I expected him to talk and say something dumb, but I just, how
he upped it again.
Yeah,
pushed
he
in more
upped
chips.
It again. And I still love the Barkley quote to Stephen A. Smith and everybody else. Will you guys stop talking to a guy who averaged 2 points in college about how great he is? What do you guys think of Jimmy Butler to Minnesota and that Timberwolves lineup now? Because the experts, the guys that were on the draft I was watching last night, like, said this actually puts them into contention in the West.
Well, yeah, he transforms the Timberwolves pretty much overnight. It's a little bit sad for lovers of LeBron that was hoping that he would make his way to Cleveland, but it is cool how impactful this is going to be for Wiggins and everybody with the Timberwolves.
This is a trade made that will challenge the Warriors this year. I really think so. Because they have a cat in Karl Anthony Towns, who is a different kind of athlete, which is wild to say in the sport of basketball when you have guys like LeBron James, but he's a 7-footer that runs the floor like a point guard and can open the floor and shoot threes as well. And Golden State doesn't have that guy. So if Butler comes in and provides the defense and Wiggins is Wiggins and he improves, they have Ricky Rubio at the point, I think Minnesota could contend a lot sooner than a lot of people might actually give them credit for.
I like the move. Gentlemen, the Jays lost in Texas again. They're going to Kansas City for a weekend set with the Royals. The Jays are now 0-9 this year with a chance to go to .500.
And I think
seven times this month they've safety.
And I think even worse than the 0-9 JT is that they've been outscored 73. I think it's 73-24 in those games. So it's not just their 0-9, but they're getting number two kicked when they put themselves in the position to finally get to peak 500. It's unbelievable.
And still hanging around. Like,
yeah,
still...
they're still only five. Now, unfortunately, they're not taking advantage of the Yankees' recent struggles here, but they are completely hanging around, only five games back with 90 however many games left and just a couple with the wild card.
I want to jump ship, boys. I want out.
You're off.
I want out.
You're out now?
I can't take this car. Like, 0-9 is, like, that, come on. It's not even like you're asking them to win, like, 7 or 8 in a row. Like, just to string a couple together here, and it's different things every time they try and do it, right? The bats go silent. Well, hey, at least we got Stroman on the mound yesterday. Oh, he gets rocked early on. Like, it's
all year you've been at the front of the Titanic. You're like, what's that couple doing hanging over the bow? Yep. Should I go to the back of
this? I'm helping people
onto
life support.
Should I go to the
Let's
back?
Let's go.
What are they doing? Is that DiCaprio? What are we doing?
I know, he's jumping into a lifeboat, pushing kids and women out of the way to jump into a lifeboat. Out of the way!
Watch the hair!
I will pay you money to get on this Astros lifeboat here and move on with the season. Matt Cause is next to talk Jays, NBA, and a whole bunch of CFL on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290, proud to be a media sponsor of the 2017 Canada Summer Games, July 28th to the 13th in our beautiful city. This is the country's largest multi-sport and cultural event for athletes. 16 sports, 250 events on the 50th anniversary. The Canada Summer Games will welcome 20,000 visitors, and it's Friday. So help paint the town red, yellow, and orange every Friday until July 21st. Wear your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing, take a picture of yourself, and share a photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games and the hashtag GearUp for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for more information about Games Gear Fridays and tickets for both ceremonies. The opening and closing are on sale now at ticketmaster.ca. Jim Toth, Trey Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 6 minutes past the hour. And we welcome back in from Toronto our good friend, Mr. Matthew Cause. How are you, sir?
What is going up, gentlemen? I am great. CFL season is here. Drafts all over the place. Jays stink. So much going on.
That's how we ended our last segment, was talking about the Jays being 0-9 when they could go to 500. But I want to start with you. There was a point there where the Sixers were acquiring so many players, I thought that my favorite NBA team might draft me.
Yeah, it was true. I don't know why I was taken. Though I'm not very athletic, I don't have much wingspan, I can't hit a jumper, and do not expect me to defend anyone. I don't know why I wasn't drafted. At least
your heart.
First round. Yeah. I have no heart. I'll throw teammates under the bus. I'm late for practice, and I kind of just want to get paid lots of money to do very little.
Cause, your thought of the spectacle of the expansion draft, the way it went down on the awards night?
It's great. It's great. You know what I love about it? It added a new wrinkle to the off season about who's going to trade for who. What's McPhee going to do in terms of, I won't take your guy if you give me, you know, these draft picks. The shot of Sidney Crosby, you know, his awkward look when Marc-Andre Fleury was introduced. I loved it. It just added a completely new wrinkle to the off season. More of this is what I like to see.
What do you think of how Vegas did this? And I know the roster is going to change and they're going to wheel and deal.
Yeah.
But what do you think of the process of – there was a couple of ways they could have gone with this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of just them accumulating as many draft picks as possible. And, you know, I mean, we kind of have to wait and see. Like, I know a lot of people weren't – Craig Button went off on the Mark Moffatt pick by Las Vegas. But let's see if – you know, is Moffatt even on the team by the time the draft starts? I like the idea of, look how many, they have three first-round draft picks. Do they move up to try to get Nolan Patrick? Do they move up to try to get in one of the top two spots? The best thing they've done is flexibility. I think the key to Vegas is,
don't worry about winning now. And that might be, it can be difficult because in your first year, what do you want to do? You want to make a splash. You want to bring the crowd in. You want to get them excited. But win now approach, especially for a team that, you know, is an expansion team, would be the wrong approach. So just get as many draft picks as you can, develop, and just realize this year's going to stink.
The word out in the GTA that Shanahan and company will be pretty aggressive here in trying to acquire some defensive help?
Yeah, and you know what? I've kind of flip-flopped on this because for so long I'm like, no, don't do anything big. And I realized the reason for that was because of so many old management teams that were impatient. You know, you look at the deal for Jeff Finger or Toskel, and of course the David Clarkson one. But, you know, and James Myrtle from The Athletic pointed this out. The Maple Leafs for the next 2 years are in that unique position of having lots of talent that can move the needle. Plus, at the same time, they're under rookie contracts. You've got this window where you can bring someone in, and it's not going to kill you for the next 2 years. I mean, obviously, I'm not advocating that crazy seven-year, you know, $11 million deal or anything like that. But I think you should be aggressive if there is a way of now bringing in Kevin Shattenkirk, who's 28. If you can bring in a defenseman that's as good or even a little bit better than Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner, think what it does. It puts everyone in their proper position. It allows everyone to go down one notch, takes pressure off of them, and guys like that can, you know, can thrive at even a higher level when they're not being asked to do as much. So I'm now in favor of it. I'm not going to say drunken spending, but you know what? You're tipsy, you have a couple drinks. Like, yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to get that suit. Go do it.
Couple drinks for Matt Cause.
That's why you see in fancy restaurants, or excuse me, fancy like clothing stores, they'll pour you a glass of wine. Oh, would you like a beer? Because you always buy, you know, a little bit more. If you have a drink or two in you, you know, the dumb gene comes out. You're like, oh, what, $500 for this shirt? I'd be losing money if I didn't get it.
Who do you think goes number one overall, and who do you think the Leafs are looking at with their first pick?
Now, on this one, I'm gonna do something that's very rare in sports media. And I'm going to say, I don't know. It's one of the things I hate to do this because it's bad radio, but one thing I rally against is at this time of year, a lot of people start talking about prospects that they haven't seen. And I haven't, you know, beyond seeing the highlights, reading Craig Button, taking a look at what Bob McKenzie has to say, I haven't watched these guys up close. Everyone just assumes it's going to be, you know, it's going to be Nolan going at number one. The best thing I can say is for the Leafs, they're in a position to take the best player available, which is a great thing for the team. Obviously, you want, you know, you would want defensemen to restock. But, you know, you've heard, you know, they've been talking about, you know, skilled wingers, guys that might look a little bit like Mitch Marner. So the overall philosophy should be take whoever the best player is available. And when I did look at the list of the guys the Leafs may be able to get at 17, I couldn't pronounce any of their names. So I'm going to be a coward and take the easy way out.
Matt, last night, a game that Darian Durant did his darndest to downplay, and yet we see the jubilant celebration at the end like it was a playoff game or something. But the bottom line for me, Causey, last night was we had Chris Schultz on yesterday, and he said he thought Saskatchewan would win 7 to 10 games, which sort of took me back a little bit. But by and large, if those two teams last night were in the bottom third of most people's thoughts in the CFL, that was a pretty entertaining and well-played game last night, if that's two of the worst teams in the CFL.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, Saskatchewan, I think what did them in is, you know, beyond the Glenn interception, they had 12 or 13 penalties. But I think 7 to 10 wins for Saskatchewan, I think that's nuts. And I have all the faith in the world of Chris Jones, and you've got to give him the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, the talent base there, I don't think is up to snuff. And you're right, it was a really good played game. But I want to add to what you first said, Troy, at the top. Why do athletes lie so much? Why can't they just come out and tell us, yeah, I want to win this game, and bleep you, Saskatchewan, bleep you, Chris Jones. We're like, treat it more like WWE. And I know you can't with the quarterback because they're the CEO of the team, but clearly we saw at the end of it just how excited Darian Durant was. And we were all rooting for him to do well against Saskatchewan. And, you know, I love seeing that emotion at the end. And you're right, it was, you know, it was a fun game. It went down to the wire. You know, I think my biggest disappointment, and I wanted to see a little bit more from Daron Carter, but, you know, it's first game of the season. That game was a lot of fun, but I don't think Saskatchewan is going to hit 500. I don't trust, you know, the quarterback situation there, even though Glenn played well. He's 37 years old. You know, they certainly upgraded with Derek Dennis on the offensive line. But I don't know. I mean, if you look at the record of Saskatchewan the last two seasons, you know, they've had single-digit wins in each of the last 2 years. And I don't think the talent infusion is at a point right now where you can predict them to go, you know, to win 8 to 10 games.
Matt Cause joining us from Toronto on the Big Show this morning, 14 minutes past the hour, TSN 1290. Your thoughts on the CFL as the season embarks? We talked a little bit with Chris Schultz.
I'm excited.
He mentioned Toronto and the commissioner, but overall, what are your feelings going into the CFL season now that it's underway?
I always go big picture, and I usually start with the quarterbacks. I'm excited, you know, and mostly more for you guys are because you got Bo Levi Mitchell. You've got Mike Riley, who, you know, I know they lost Darrell Walker, but could put up similar numbers. Jonathan Jennings, I think, is going to win the MOP. I love just his ascension as a quarterback. So, you know, you got a lot. I think you got a bunch of good quarterbacks in the league, and I think that's going to be exciting. I think one of the keys for this year is the health of Zach Collaros and Trevor Harris. If those two guys can stay healthy, and, you know, it will just lead to better competition between those two teams. But on the top of that, we need better representation from the East. Not one team had a winning record last year, and I know Ottawa won the Grey Cup, but that still is a factor. So, you know, if Collaros and Harris can stay healthy, we won't even talk about Ricky Ray, then I think this could be a really good CFL season. Definitely excited for just what's to come, and especially just the Calgary-Edmonton-BC Lion battle, and then just more locally for Winnipeg, I hope that you prove all the naysayers like myself wrong. You know, I hope it's like, no, last year wasn't a fluke. Yes, we were plus 29 in turnover margin, but that's because we're a damn good team. And I'm hoping that the Matt Nichols we saw in that playoff loss to the Lions, the guy who took chances, the guy who went deep, the guy who, you know, was threatening the secondary of the Lions. I hope we see that guy all year.
Kazi, at the end of this season, will you look at the situation with the Argos in the GTA and think, finally, it looks like some traction is happening? Or do you expect to look at it and go, they're in a lot of trouble here?
If I have to choose between one of those two, because the easy answer would be say, well, it's somewhere in the middle. And I bet you guys as radio hosts hate when guests go, well, it's somewhere in the middle. I think it's still going to be in trouble. I think it's going to be in trouble for another year because I question the entertainment value that's going to be on the field. You know, unless Ricky Ray gets healthy and some of these unknown wide receivers take a step up, or some of the young guys from last year really take that leap, like the Anthony Coombs of the world, I question how entertaining the product's going to be. And if it's not that entertaining, I don't think you're going to have a huge spike in attendance. The best thing they have going for them is credibility, just with Pop and Tressman. But as I wrote about in my column in CFL.ca, when the best thing you can say about a team is its coach and its general manager, that's trouble. It's good because you realize that the team down the road should be a very talented and competitive team because everything starts from the top. But going into this year, no, I think it'd be more trouble than everything's going to be A-OK.
Jays are 0-9 when they try to go to 500 this year.
Yeah, they are.
Brandon Rewicki already said he's trying to get off the Titanic and jump on an Astros lifeboat with me.
Do it. Do it. He's a coward.
I was going to ask. Are you out on the Jays?
First off, good move by Brandon there because, you know, what's the point of rooting for a team that's doing bad? Be a coward. Just jump from team to team. hey, by the way, my favorite team, the Cubs. Wait, they're not doing that good? Oh, no, I was always a Nationals fan. The worst thing about the Jays is not just their 0-9, but look what the scoring differential is in those games. And they're being killed. And Josh Donaldson is now hurt again. The Jays right now, this is the most guys they've seen on the injury list since 2013. The problem is you can keep going, no, it's still okay. It's still early. But, you know, at some point you gotta get over 500. So I think the best case scenario for the Jays is they'll be competitive, but I'm not that confident in it. I think this is going to be the below 500 season. And again, like I'm sure a lot of people have said, this is the wait and see. They may blow it up because they do have some great assets in some pitchers that could help the team down the road.
At MCause56 on Twitter. Of course, CFL.ca is where you can read some of his fine work. Thanks for doing this, Matt. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. You guys as well. Take care.
Take care, Causey.
We will talk about this draft that starts tonight and with our coverage at 3 p.m. that starts today on The Big Show next, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, 22 minutes past the hour. The draft tonight in Chicago, round one, rounds two till seven. Tomorrow, of course, the afternoon ride, we'll have coverage beginning at three with Husser and Paul Edmonds. Jordan Eberle traded for Ryan Strome yesterday in the National Hockey League as well. Insider trading with James Duffy, Darren Drigger, Pierre LeBrun, and Bob McKenzie talks about the trade and then the draft tonight.
Thank you. Full slate of insiders, Darren Drager, Pierre LeBrun, and Bob McKenzie. Jordan Eberle joked with me back at the NHL trade deadline that he was the all-time leader in appearances on our trade bait list. It was about 3 years running. Well, Jordan, you are officially off it, dealt to the New York Islanders. This was in the works for a while.
It was long in coming. In fact, many believe before the March 1st NHL trade deadline. And obviously, Peter Chiarelli of the Edmonton Oilers did not get the deal that he was looking for Jordan Eberle back on March 1st. But there's a sense of urgency, not desperation, but urgency. And it felt like the time was right now in the offseason to make this move. Now, Edmonton's happy with it in Ryan Strome. They get a good player who's looking to hit the reset button. Likewise for Jordan Eberle. And it's not like Gar Snow and the Islanders were alone in the chase for Eberle. I'm told that there were at least four, maybe five teams that had interest, and there were offers on the table for Eberle. It'll be interesting moving forward now to see what Snow and the Islanders continue to do from this point forward. We projected this was a team that was in position to make a splash, and think they've certainly made a ripple, you know, in the coverage here in Chicago at the draft, but perhaps Travis Hamonic is the next to move from the Islanders.
And with Eberle gone out of Edmonton, Dregs, there's some cap savings, and I think the Oilers will waste no time in trying to re-up Chris Russell, pending UFA. Now it takes two to tango, but certainly the idea is that the Oilers will try to get that done over the next couple of days.
And Dregs, you mentioned Hamonic, and that's a player that's very much in play right now. The New York Islanders are shopping him around. One team that has some interest in Hamonic, and I say some interest, is the Calgary Flames. Now, right now, the price appears to be pretty significant. But here's the thing with the Flames. You've got Giordano. You've got TJ Brody. You've got Dougie Hamilton. You've got a big three. They'd like to solidify their top four. And Hamonic is a guy who's affordable in the sense of his contract, but maybe not affordable in terms of the price that the Islanders may be asking for. There's word on the street that maybe the Islanders are asking for as much as two first-round picks. I think the Flames recognize that if they're going to get a guy like Hamonic, that you have to give up a first-round pick plus or a first-round pick plus, but not two first-round picks. They're also, though, simultaneously negotiating with their own pending unrestricted free agent Michael Stone on a new contract there, so that might be the other option, if not Hamonic.
With Eberle traded, Alex Galchenyuk moves higher up the list of forwards that weren't quite fitting in their town that might be moved. Who has interest?
Well, the New Jersey Devils are one of the teams that has called a couple times on Montreal regarding Galchenyuk. In fact, they spoke again on this day. Now, is it a fit? You know, I think the Devils, in some level, look at that contract and obviously have to sign the guy if they trade for him. Listen, there are other teams that are also involved in discussions with the Canadiens. I don't want to label the Devils a front runner, but they're definitely a team that's keeping an eye on what's going on there.
Now, the Minnesota Wild had some conversations with the Montreal Canadiens before the trade freeze, but I don't get the sense that the Minnesota Wild see Galchenyuk as what they're looking towards in terms of a fit. Now, the Montreal Canadiens do have interest in Marco Scandella, defenseman from the Minnesota Wild, and everybody's looking at the Wild because Scandella's potentially available, Jonas Brodin, the defenseman that they've got there, Matt Dumba as well. So Chuck Fletcher and the Minnesota Wild have to sort out which one of those D they want to trade or if they're going to trade them. Scandella might be the most likely, and there's lots of teams, Buffalo, Montreal, amongst others, looking for those defensemen.
Certainly a ton of talk, as always, though I will say it's much quieter than the last time we were all together on the rooftop of Tootsie's in Nashville. That's because we're in a downtown Chicago hotel where the GMs met on Thursday. They'll meet again on the draft floor on Friday.
That's insider trading on the deal. And who else is out there? Hamonic, of course, being shopped again. I know a lot of Winnipeggers want that to happen, but as a right-handed D, if you go forward with this crew you have, there's not really much room for Travis Hamonic.
Well, there's no room for him. And then I say, well, you could be a great partner with Bufflin, and So which of these two guys that you've never seen play outside of the power play on the left side, where you're going to, you just can't do it. It's real tragic that it's not a fit here, but it's not a fit here. Tell you one thing, watching, you sure hope, you know, here Sheveldaeff was close to a couple of big moves here, but you just wonder and you hope that they're going to make a move on either strengthening that left side for the Jets going forward on that D. To see David Schlemko go for a fifth-round pick yesterday is interesting, isn't it, for Jets fans? A left side D, a solid depth guy for a fifth-round pick. That's just you see somebody come and go like that, and it makes you just wonder how active, how aggressive are they going to be here.
It's a tough one, too, especially because he's a guy that doesn't have a no-trade, no-move. You go after that guy, you offer the price, you would have got him.
And 3 years at $2 million left. Yeah. Like, that's very attractive, even juicy for a 5'6 guy, that if that's what you were going to use him for. Real interesting to see how busy not only the Winnipeg Jets will be this weekend at the draft, but just how the National Hockey League is. And once again, we will have a coverage live from Chicago beginning at 3 today and right through the first round into tonight with Hustler and Paul Edmonds starting on the afternoon ride at 3. And then all day tomorrow, Ezra Ginsberg will join them as well for rounds 2 through 7 right here on TSN 1290. Adam Kimmelman from NHL.com is next on The Big Show.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Registration is now open and event tickets for non-participants go on sale now. Taking the stage this year is multi-award winning Sam Roberts Band. Proceeds from this event will be supporting Kids Sport and the True North Youth Foundation. More information online at tsn1290.ca.
Can I give a big shout-out to Mark Shifley? He's got a golf tournament coming up, all for Kids Sport. It's a fantastic event. Kids Sport is always top-shelf, first class. Shifley will be out there with a bunch of his friends and a bunch of other high-level athletes. You can go out and hang out for the day, have a pile of fun. Go to shifleygolfclassic.ca. shifleygolfclassic.ca, and there's a team there. Bid on a team to become a team in the tournament and have a bunch of fun.
I was going to add something to that. I forgot what it was. Oh, that's where the city was introduced to Patrick Laine.
That's right.
After the draft, he showed up and went to, that was his first sort
Trey,
of public event.
I was there with Trey, and I said, I pointed to to Laine. I said, Trey, look at that guy. He's going to be an absolute superstar. Trey got a picture real early on with Patrick Laine.
I wanted to mention that as you were doing it, but this caught my eye. Of course, Josh Jackson was drafted fourth overall yesterday from Kansas, the sixth shooting guard, 6'8", 27 pounds, by Phoenix. He was rumored to go to Boston. The story's coming out on SportsCenter right now that Danny Ainge of the Boston Celtics commenting on, they flew across country to see Josh Jackson in a workout, and he canceled it. And the quote from Danny Ainge is, "Are you kidding me? I tried not to overreact, but we flew across country. I had to get up at 4 o'clock and fly back home, and you didn't show up." So that's probably why they didn't take him at 3 over that. Now, he only dropped one spot, but that's interesting as well.
I like Mark Mathot, a no-trade list, all teams in Canada except for Ottawa. Dude, this guy's Canadian. What's wrong with this guy?
He wants to stay in Ottawa, being an Ottawa boy.
What the heck?
Adam Kimmelman from NHL.com rejoins the program, a good friend of the show. Adam, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you. If you're a Canadian hockey player, is it even legal to put no-trade clauses in about every Canadian team but the one you're playing for?
Well, you know, it does get cold up there in the winter. Maybe they're, I don't know, maybe they just kind of want to escape.
It's a loaded question for you, I know. I thought you were going to leave it at that. It does get cold. Can we move on? Let's not talk about that. Mark Mathot has a no-trade clause to all the remaining Canadian cities other than Ottawa. I would assume that he may waive that or not. Before we get into the draft and trades and everything else, Adam, your thoughts on the expansion process and how it played out?
Yeah, I think it was very entertaining to watch. You know, we hadn't really seen it in the Twitter era, so it was fun to sort of following it that way, you know, seeing how, you know, watching it in real time, watching how everybody responded to it. predicting, you know, reacting. It was very entertaining, and it was kind of neat just seeing a team just sort of become a team right before our very eyes in one, you know, 2-hour show. So it was pretty cool.
What was the biggest surprise or shock maybe during the course? Maybe was it the Islanders, or what was it that unfolded during the course of that night that took you back the most?
Yeah, I think the Islanders, you know, giving up what they gave up to protect, you know, whatever players they wanted to protect. It did seem a bit much, but, you know, they had their reasons for doing what they did, and then we saw it the next day. They traded Ryan Strome to the Oilers for Jordan Eberle. So I think those two moves kind of, you know, were a little bit surprising just how they've kind of gone about things, but, you know, they had their plan in place, and this is what they felt they needed to do to make themselves a successful team. And we'll just have to see, you know, if their decisions pay off moving forward.
Well, see, I see here that you've got Nolan Patrick here being taken first overall. Why do you have Patrick in front of Heese here?
Well, I think it's a very narrow gap. I think, you know, had Patrick been healthy all season, I don't know if we'd be even having this discussion. He, to me, when he was on his game, appeared to be the best draft-eligible player. You know, Nico Hischier's a very good player. Gabe Vilardi's a very good player. I think Patrick just a little bit above the rest. You know, the size, the strength, the hockey IQ, you know, he's competent in all three zones. To me, if I could take any player available in this draft class, know he's going to be healthy, know I'm going to have him for 15 years. Nolan Patrick is the guy I want. Just he seems like he's a little bit a cut above the rest of this draft class.
Some talk around Vegas and their three first-round picks in the top 15 moving two or maybe all three of them to get up to number two. Do you think that happens? Do you think the Flyers would listen to that?
You know, we've been kind of talking about that amongst ourselves. Would, you know, 6, 13, and 15 be enough to move up into one or two or even three? I'm not so sure. You know, this is the kind of draft where the guy that you get it to could be there at six. So, you know, if you have a bigger net and three picks gives you a pretty big net, you know, will you catch a bigger, better fish with three picks than you would with one? So I think there's some philosophical discussions going on there. Unless there's a guy that they absolutely are in love with and think is a can't-miss superstar, I have the feeling they sort of stay where they are with 6, 13, and 15 and you know, take three guys, and they'll get three pretty good players who are going to be, you know, contributing guys in the next 3 years to a team on the rise versus trading up and getting one guy who, you know, maybe can help them in 2 to 3 years. So, you know, they're in a situation where I think they need more. And having, you know, three picks in a draft that isn't really, you know, loaded with superstar talent, I think having three picks might be a little bit better for them than having one.
You've got Gabriel Vilardi jumping up to number three, being plucked by the Stars, a bit of a jump for him. What is it about him that caused the jump for you?
You know, I think it's just the size and the strength, the way he's able to dominate against competition in the offensive zone from the dots down. And at 6'3", 202, at 18 years old, there's a chance for him to get a little bit bigger and a little bit stronger even. The skills are there. The hockey IQ is there. You know, Dallas needs some help through the middle. Jason Spezza is getting a little bit older. They just lost Cody Eakin in the expansion draft. You know, within a year or two, I think Vilardi is going to be NHL ready. It was a real difficult call between Vilardi and Casey Mittelstadt in that spot. They're two sort of different players. Mittelstadt's got a little bit more of a rush game versus Vilardi, just, you know, a little stronger, a little more powerful. But I just think at the end of the day, if you can get a guy who's able to play down low the way Vilardi can, control the play, you know, get to the net, he can play on the wing as well, that's a tough guy to pass on.
How did Vilardi's Blue Jays hat at our Cubs game to throw out the first pitch go over?
You know what? I didn't even realize it was a Blue Jays hat. It was a black hat with that, you know, inset logo, so I didn't even notice it at first. Somebody pointed it out to me on Twitter. But, you know, he's a Kingston boy. He said he grew up a Jays fan. He's not a huge baseball fan, but that was just, you know, the hat he happened to grab. He was very happy to swap it with a Cubs hat, though.
Hey, I see it, number 24, and I'm going to apologize right now for destroying this last name, but you've got defenseman Henry Jokiharju as the Jets' fourth pick. Please tell us about him.
You know, when you look at their defense corps, Bufflin and Anstrom are both, you know, going to be north of 32 by the time next season starts. That's 2 year top four in ice time. So finding a young defenseman, I think, is sort of where they need to look. And Jokiharju is an offensive-minded guy, carries the puck, smart, you know, really good. You know, he's sort of the modern-day defenseman where he can get the puck up the ice, good breakout passes, you know, or he can carry it and lead the rush. I think he's sort of what they'll need in another 2 or 3 years. They've got all these talented young forwards between Laine and Scheifele and Ehlers, and you need somebody to get them the puck, and he's a guy who's talented enough to get them the puck in the right spots.
Adam Kimmelman, Deputy Managing Editor of NHL.com, joining us on the Big Show today, 42 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. A lot of eyes on the Jets now that they have some assets and what they'll do not only around this draft but free agency and throughout the summer. What other teams do you think will be very active in making some changes given the avenues they have, free agency, trade, or whatnot?
You know, I'm really curious to see what Washington does this offseason. You know, they talked a lot about how this season was the real big opportunity for them. They really loaded up for this season. And now, you know, Oshie's a free agent. Alzner's a free agent. You know, there's a couple of guys that they're not quite sure what they're going to do with, if they're going to bring them back, if they're going to look to move them. So what happens next for the President's Trophy winning team? You know, they have a coach going into the last year of his contract. Will they extend him? You know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how they proceed through July 1 and then, you know, what they look like come September. You know, it's a team that could be a little bit different moving forward, you know, after winning the President's Trophy and going out in the second round of the playoffs. So I'm real curious to see what Brian McLeod and their GM does and how they approach things.
Adam, I just want to bounce back to the Islanders a little bit here again. There's continued talk about Hamonic being moved, the possibility of DeHaan being moved. Can you take us into that organization and kind of get us into an understanding of just what exactly they're trying to accomplish here?
Well, I think they're doing everything they can to put a winning team around John Tavares and convince him that, you know, the pieces are in place, that they can be a successful team, not just for one season, but for a couple of seasons, and to get him to sign the extension that'll keep him there. You know, he's the centerpiece of that franchise. He makes everything run there. And, you know, they're going into the last year of his deal. They want to get it done. They were hoping to have something for July 1st. I don't know if they will or not. I don't know if this is something that's going to carry into the season or not, but everything seems sort of geared around that, you know, making sure that Tavares is comfortable and happy with the players and the entire situation around him. You know, Doug Wade is a coach that he knows and that he trusts, and going back to last season, they were successful with him. You know, Jordan Eberle is a guy that he knows, played World Juniors with, so there's a sense of comfort around that where, you know, he's got a guy that he knows how he plays, a guy he can trust, and, you know, I think that's going to be sort of the focus of their offseason, if they can put the pieces in place to get John to sign a long-term extension.
There's no coach in Arizona, Adam, no captain, no president, no CEO. I could go on and on. No number one center as of right now. What's going on with them around this draft specifically, and how does a team go into a draft like this?
You know, it's very. We saw that news last night, and it was a little bit surprising, you know, for the timing of it. You know, to have it happen, you know, the night before the draft when there's no other head coaching vacancies. You know, we thought all the jobs had been filled and everything would be had been taken care of. You know, I think this is a situation where they're deciding to take a few big steps forward. You know, they traded Mike Smith. They told Shane Doan they weren't going to offer him a contract. They're really sort of moving into a new era here. And Dave Tippett is a guy, I guess, who, you know, from reading the release, they had different philosophies on how they wanted to construct the team going forward. They want to get even younger on the roster, and I guess Tippett wasn't really, you know, he had his ideas and ownership, and the GM had their ideas, and you know, when you have that situation, yeah, you know, the guy who owns the team is the one who makes the final decision. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they perceive what kind of a coach they look for? Do they try to find another veteran guy? Do they look to find a younger coach just to match the fact they're going to have a younger roster? It's going to be very curious to see, how they handle these things. They had two picks in the first round. What direction will they go in? I don't know. It's going to be really, really curious to watch.
Adam, we appreciate your time as always, and enjoy the busy weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, Adam. Take care, man.
At NHL, Adam K on Twitter and NHL.com, of course, where you can see some of his fine work. This segment was brought to you by Johnson Waste Management, recognized at best in the business 10 years in a row. NHL news and notes are next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf card today and hit the greens throughout the summer with great two-for-one deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Winkler Centennial Golf Course, Carmen Golf Club, Scottswood Lynx Golf Course, Kingswood Golf and Country Club, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, and the Steinbeck Flying Golf Club, just to name a few. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit TSN1290.ca. NHL news and notes time, gentlemen, and let's get into the Dave Tippett situation. Both mutually agreeing to part ways. It's hard not to read a lot into this, but given the timing, given where it is, and really with the draft, you would have to think it centers around just a different philosophy, probably ongoing, but then also leading into the draft. Like when you sit down, you're probably having these discussions of what you want to do and what direction. I don't know if the Shane Doan thing had a lot to do with it, because we were told that John Chayka and Dave Tippett, weren't in on that decision. There was strictly an owner who said, we're not offering him a deal. What do you make of the situation and especially the timing of it?
Yeah, the Shane Doan thing isn't even a discussion. For people that are saying, the Coyotes are lost, yada, 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 mostly, I think, with respect, old-timers who have a soft spot in their heart for Shane Doan, Shane Doan's time had come and gone. That's just the fact. That's the way it is, man. But the Dave Tippett thing, guys, I can appreciate Chayka wanting his own guy in there, maybe someone, but what Dave Tippett deserves a medal for what he accomplished in Arizona during the time there. Like, as highly regarded as Shane Doan is, same sort of thing here for Dave Tippett being down in Arizona and year after year making chicken salad out of chicken number two, huh? Like, has there been a coach in a more brutal, dire situation with less to work with who has accomplished a greater record than what Dave Tippett did down in Arizona? Is he going to be out there like for more than the next 5 minutes? Shouldn't someone just jump, push their coach out of the way and hire Dave Tippett? Are you kidding me? What would this guy do with an actual roster?
Well, and he had, they missed the playoffs 5 years in a row, but people kind of forget that the Coyotes went to the conference final in 2012 before they ran into the buzzsaw LA Kings. I think he's a hell of a coach. This is probably the best thing for him in all reality. Like, just get out of that city. And a lot of people are saying this is the whole money ball. This is what happens when you hire a young GM. It has nothing to do with that. This is an owner that's starting to get a little bit too involved into the process. And it sounds like the owner, like you said, Jim, made the move with Doan or had a large influence in that decision and now has done the same sort of thing with Tippett here. So you just hope Tippett goes to a situation just a bit. I mean, it's hard to find one less stable than Arizona. But
you think this is more owner than GM?
I do.
I was going to say it's every story says it's differences of opinion that this is going on. And Chayka's an analytics guy, and Dave Tippett. That's why I wanted to discuss this, because Dave Tippett, as we just said on the show, a great coach. And Chayka is a young, new breed analytics guy, and it looks like this is another situation of that relationship not working out. Gerard Gallant in Florida, Dave Tippett. Talking about bad coaches here.
Hey, this is if you're anytime you're a head coach, and a new GM shows up, you know that you're on a short leash. If that you're not his guy. This is the way it works, man. This is the law of the jungle in pro or high-level sport. If you're not hand-chosen by that GM, you are on borrowed time, and very, very seldom, maybe never, will you outlive that GM. And unless you go and capture championships or get real close to that, you're going to be out the door at some point in time. I think this is John Chayka's stamp on here. I think with Doan, and I think even and with Tippett here, you know, he should have his own guy in place. That's his inherent right as a GM. If he's not happy with Tippett, make the move.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, we just went off about how great of a coach Dave Tippett is. John Chayka doesn't see that.
Well, if he just wants young, fresher ideas, someone that's more along the lines of his thinking, you can understand the synergy involved with Chayka. Like, Chayka's butt is on the line here. So I understand him putting into place someone that thinks more along his lines and shares an understanding
Chayka's
like that.
Chayka's butt isn't on the line. He's been given free rein to point this organization in a brand new direction.
Well, it's his
and
job,
a lot
man.
Of time to do it.
His butt's always on the line as a GM. He's making his reputation as we speak, as each day goes by.
Well, they're going to be worse than Vegas, and I don't think he's going to get fired. So I think it's if anything, he's got the owner's ear, and it's his direction. And when a guy like Dave Tippett sitting here going, I don't agree with this or I don't agree with that, to me it's no different than the Gerard Gallant situation in Florida. It's just it's a different thought process between your head coach and your management.
And who wins? The manager wins. It's the hierarchy, man. It's the vision of the GM. The coach is under the vision of the GM. And if you don't fit, you're going to go look for work somewhere else.
Now, we see good coaches leave all the time, too, right? Like, it's not like this is a one-off scenario.
Agreed, yeah.
We see it in Nashville, right? Peter Laviolette. How did he get – it's not like he coached 40 straight years in Nashville. He's been fired from three different teams after taking each of them to the Stanley Cup Finals. Like, sometimes, too – coaches, as good as they may be, just run their course with an organization. And maybe that's the case here, too, where you've been in one place long enough, and sometimes I don't think that's necessarily the case here, but just because he's a good coach doesn't mean he's exempt from being let go from a team.
I tell you what, if he wants to take a vacay, he just signed a five-year extension last year. So Dave Tippett can have a whole lot of fun at his son.
It sounds to me like when they say mutual parting of ways, that's Dave Tippett going, I don't want to do this, and if you don't like it, I'd like to go. And they say, okay, you can go. Like, and to me, this isn't you're out.
The mutual parting of ways is, to me, more of the public.
It's never mutual.
We're not going to make this one way or the other. Let's present it like this and keep things at a minimal regards to blowout and fodder for media to go over.
I think the day before the draft, I think this is purely, I don't agree with this, I don't like it, and if this is the way you're going to go, and if this is the direction we're going to go with this draft, I don't want to be here. And they're like, all right, well, if you don't want to be here, go ahead. And that's how you get a mutual parting of ways. But it's also interesting in Florida, same sort of thing. The analytics comes in, Gerard Gallant doesn't like it, they dispute, they get rid of him, Tom Rowe is put in place, doesn't work, Tom Rowe is out. Who do they bring in? A coach who literally says, I don't buy into analytics that much.
Like, Florida is kind of a mess too, though. Like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and that goes both ways. There's something fishy going on in Florida with some kind of a wrestling match between eras of looking at hockey. Mm-hmm. I think that's a different.
Really, like, that exists in a huge way, right? There's a bit of a war. I don't know if it's a war or if it's more of a marriage.
It's a conflict.
It's not working.
It hasn't escalated.
And maybe that's
into
the
war,
same
yet.
Thing anyway.
That's why I continuously say this. Like, I always say, like, why can't they just get along? Like, yeah. It has to be, you have to use the both philosophies, and it just seems that we see more and more that despite how good of a coach you are, despite the general managers, the philosophies never match up, that it always ends up in this divorce. It's real interesting. Like, literally, they have no coach, they have no captain, they have no president, they have no CEO, they have no starting number one center. They have no
fans.
President of hockey ops.
No hope.
No fans. And they're going into the draft tonight. It's a bizarre situation.
Let's go Yotes.
Seattle or Quebec City.
We'll take a break and talk some Bombers with Darren Bomby next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and United Firefighters of Winnipeg present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 1290-90. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, United Firefighters of Winnipeg will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaelia, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Michaelia and Caring for Kids, visit tsn1290.ca. Caring for Kids is presented by United Firefighters of Winnipeg and TSN 1290. Jim Tolf, Troy Wester, Brandon Rewicki with you. 8 minutes past the hour, and the CFL season officially kicked off last night with the Montreal Alouettes pulling out a 17-16 win at home over the Saskatchewan Roughriders. I know that makes a lot of Blue Bomber fans happy to see Saskatchewan start the season at 0-1. To talk CFL and the Blue Bombers, we welcome back into the program TSN 1290's very own Darren Bombing and host of CFL 60 and Blue Bomber Game Day. How are you, Bomber?
Hey, I'm good, fellas. How are you today?
Good, thanks. We'll just begin with your thoughts on how the season kicked off with that Alouettes win at home.
Yeah, you know, after the game, I just sent out a tweet. I thought it was a pretty good game, but not a great one. There were moments in that game that, you know, it really lulled, but it was about what I expected. I don't think either of these teams showed too much. I think they're both looking like they're going to struggle early on. You know, Kevin Glenn was probably the better quarterback in that football game, but Darian Durant got enough done to get his team down the field and win that football game. But I'll be honest with you, just in watching those two play against each other, I could kind of tell that Saskatchewan and Montreal both built very differently. Montreal, very veteran-laden, the oldest team in the league by a mile, and then a very young team in Saskatchewan outside of their starting quarterback in Kevin Glenn. They just don't look like two teams that are going to be pushing too many. I look forward to the rest of the games this week where, you know, a game tonight, Saturday, and then Sunday afternoon where we're probably going to see some better football because I expect the teams to just be stronger.
You and I have different takes of last night. What I saw last night from, and specifically Saskatchewan, was an offense that moved the ball pretty well with Kevin Glenn. And like you were touching on, the young defense that did a decent job of keeping Darian Durant fairly quiet. I got a little bit more scared last night. We had Chris Schultz on yesterday predicting Saskatchewan gets somewhere between 7 and 10 wins.
Wow.
Now, if they get 7 wins, that's grabbing. Like, how congested is the West going to be, Darren? And where do you see ultimately the Bombers fitting in?
Yeah, you know, I will agree with you that Saskatchewan did move the ball pretty well. And that's what I expected from Kevin Glenn because he always seems to start seasons well. But I didn't, you know, I generally expect his play to regress as the season goes on. He's always started seasons well. Can he continue it, you know, through the 20-week grueling CFL season? I disagree with Chris Schultz. I don't see Saskatchewan, you know, pushing 7, 8, 9 wins this year. I expect them to be a team that's going to be fighting, you know, tooth and nail to be .500 this year. The West will be tough, and I think it's going to be tough because Edmonton and Winnipeg are going to be those teams fighting to push BC and Calgary. I think they're the class of the West. I think they're the class of the entire league. I don't see Saskatchewan in that mix. I don't see enough talent Canadian-wise, the Winnipegger, the former Manitoba Bison, Nick Dembski, looked superb last night. You know, he wasn't even slated to be a starter week one for the Saskatchewan Roughriders because it was going to be Rob Bagg. Bagg is on the one-game injured list, and Nick Dembski got his opportunity. Maybe he did enough in that game to convince Chris Jones he deserves to be in that receiving core. But I disagree with Chris Schultz. I don't see Saskatchewan being that strong this year. I guess we'll have to wait and see. I would like to see Saskatchewan play against, you know, in a more elite team to see how they measure up. We're going to see them against Winnipeg next week. Again, I've talked to you guys about this before following this preseason. Some question marks about this Blue Bombers defense. So it may be a few weeks before we get a really good gauge on Kevin Glenn and the Saskatchewan offense and how they operate.
Maybe lucky, Darren, that the Bombers have this bye because it sounds like, as per you yesterday, Andrew Harris a little bit banged up.
Yeah, it doesn't look too serious. It was, you know, about midway or a little bit past midway through practice yesterday where he just kind of, you know, pulled up. It looked like an ankle. I can't confirm that. I'm unsure, but something in his leg, something in his lower leg region, in his left leg. But just pulled himself out of practice, was walking around, no limp, nothing visual in that sense, but just looked to be in some discomfort. And we mentioned it, you know, we asked Mike O'Shea about it, and he kind of, you know, made light of it. So it doesn't seem serious. He expects him to be fine. We're going to see today if he's okay. The really positive news that came out of Blue Bombers practice yesterday is that we finally got an opportunity to speak to the team's reigning most outstanding defensive player in Maurice Leggett, injured on May 29th, the second day of training camp, and hadn't practiced until this week. They're slowly easing him into things, and he's running around really pretty much at full speed yesterday. Played a little bit of corner, you know, a position that he really has not played in his 4 years in the Canadian Football League. He's been a safety. He's been a strong side linebacker. They're putting him out on that corner just to see if he can run with the big dogs, and he looks very comfortable. That's the big question, if Mo Leggett is going to be ready to go July 1st, but all indications earlier that he's going to be okay.
DB, last year the Bombers were dead last in opponents' net offense, allowing 407.9 yards per game. In the two preseason games, they allowed 426 yards per game. In the passing department, the Bombers were dead last year, allowing an average of 335.2 yards per game. This year in the preseason, they allowed two teams without either starting quarterback 313 yards per game. Please do your best to tell me why I shouldn't be crapping my pants as a fan of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers about this defense.
I'm concerned about this Blue Bombers defense from what I saw in the preseason. A lot of fans are concerned. You're obviously concerned, and I think that's justified. I asked Mike O'Shea about this. Sarah Leske and I talk about it in our 3-3 series we're going to do every week through the CFL season. You can watch that on tsn.ca right now. Mike O'Shea is not concerned. I asked him straight up, is there any level of disconcertion? Is there any level of concern about the way your defense performed in the preseason? They faced James Franklin. They faced Brandon Bridge. They did not face a number one quarterback, as you mentioned. But he says that this defense and the preseason, they used it as an evaluation tool. They wanted to find out who is able to play on this defense. They didn't play the ones a lot. Obviously, with these games not being on TV, it's hard for fans and a lot of people to get a gauge on this defense. But you just go by historical record. You mentioned how they finished last in points against, in yards against, pass yards against, opponents' first downs. They were the worst defense statistically in those categories in 2016. The proof is going to be in the pudding. Is the defense going to be, you know, as vanilla as it was in the preseason? We'll wait and see. But I think there is a level of concern. That's where my focus is going to be really keyed in. You know, in the early part of the season, I'm not concerned about the offense. They look very smooth. They look like they can operate under any of their three starting quarterbacks. Matt Nichols, I expect big things from him this year, as he's probably got a chip on his shoulder with the way people are talking to him. But you're right, Troy. You know, crap in your pants is one way of putting it, the way you did. I am concerned. I think people will be concerned. And until we get a really good gauge when the games matter, I'm going to reserve judgment. But for sure, that's where I think fans' focus should be, of where the weakness might be on this team.
Darren Bauman joining us on the big show this morning, TSN 1290, talking Bombers and CFL, 13 minutes past the hour. Hard to argue with this year's Hall of Fame class going into the Winnipeg Blue Bombers Hall of Fame. Darren, wide receiver Terrence Edwards and builders Gene Dunn and David Asper.
Yeah, as far as the builders are concerned, Gene Dunn and David Asper have both been working very closely together with this football team over many, many years. And, you know, no surprise that those two are inducted as builders. They've been members of the board of directors for the Blue Bombers for a long time, and have since, you know, given up their seats on that board. So no surprise there. Obviously, David Asper, a large part of, you know, the football club's plans to move out of Canadian Stadium and into Investors Group Field. When it comes to Terrence Edwards, a lot of people were wondering when this day would come. There were, you know, there was some social media uproar from Terrence Edwards himself in, you know, not being honored by the football club over the last couple of years since his retirement. This is the first year Terrence Edwards was eligible to be inducted into the Blue Bombers Hall of Fame. He's fourth all-time in receiving yards, part of one of the best, in my opinion, receiving corps in Blue Bombers history, you know, with Armstrong and Milt Stegall and a lot of really good, talented players back in that 2007 run to the Grey Cup, obviously with Kevin Glenn breaking his arm that season. Three individuals that I think are deserving, and they'll be inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. It's been a longstanding tradition here in Winnipeg.
Darren, we appreciate your time as always. Going to be a great first week of the CFL this weekend, and then, of course, it shifts to the Bombers opening the year on the road. We'll talk to you soon, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys. You too. Enjoy the game.
Thanks so much, DB. I got to say something about Gene Dunn and David Asper. Those two cats bleed blue and gold, and David Asper is a little bit more out in the spotlight than Gene Dunn has been typically over the years, but both so absolutely critical in so many things that the Bombers have accomplished since my time in joining with the team going forward up to present day. So a big time tip of the hat, both those guys. If you love your Bombers, you have got to absolutely love and adore Gene Dunn and David Asper.
All very deserving inductees for sure, and Terrence Edwards as well, the 2017 in Winnipeg Blue Bombers Hall of Fame class. Gene Dunn and Dave Asper as builders, and receiver Terrence Edwards going in the player category. We'll take a break here on The Big Show. When we come back, we'll talk more about the NHL draft on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is excited to support Canada 150 at the Ford Saturday, July 1st. Visitors will experience tons of free family-friendly programming at five stages around the forts. Experience a powwow and Indigenous storytelling at the Odina Celebration Circle, and of course, a stunning fireworks spectacle to cap things off at 11 p.m. For a complete list and lineup of over 50 acts and more, visit theforks.com or tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 20 minutes past the hour, and the infamous, world-famous, heart-stopping six-pack coming up at 8:30. Boss Pizza Fan Line. Lots to talk about around the Jets, the draft.
You didn't call
the Eberle trade.
You didn't call the six pack infamous.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't do that. That's a negative. We're just world famous.
We're famous.
We're not
infamous. I'm a journalist. I present all the facts, and last
Maybe
week
notorious.
It was infamous. Notorious is another way to put it.
I realize you're a journalist, so please choose your words more carefully then.
It's factual. 2-6 last week.
That's impressive because we only made six picks. We picked up two extra losses.
Two of six, I should say. 2-4 is the proper way, being that we're factual here on The Big Show, TSN 1290. The NHL draft tonight, gentlemen. Jets are the 24th pick. First and foremost, do they move around here prior to the draft? Do they move up?
I don't think they move up.
No, if anything, if they were to make a trade involving moving up or moving down, I would expect them to move down at the very least. I don't know if it makes sense for them to move up in this draft and with the way their assets are kind of lined up right now. If they make a trade, I expect them to get a roster player more so than to move up or down.
That's what I'm doing. I am sacrificing a can of tuna along with a couple of other a peanut butter sandwich, a couple other things here, so that the Jets go make a trade with this number 24 pick, something, somebody else, and go get a top four or just a top six even left side D. Like, go get some strength there. Go get somebody on that left side to bolster Morrissey and Enstrom.
Darren Dreger just reporting, putting out on Twitter, as others have speculated, expect the Panthers to announce Jack Capilano as an associate coach today with Florida, focus on D and the penalty kill. And, of course, Chris Pronger leaves the NHL office and heads to the hockey ops with the Florida Panthers yesterday as well.
Now the player safety office is actually back to some player safety. Thank you for your work, Mr. Pronger.
I wouldn't go that far.
Let's hope they take a step in the right direction, because it's been a gonk show since he's been associated with it.
So if they don't move up in the draft, do they make a deal? Do you think something happens this weekend? The Jets, I mean.
I don't know if it happens this weekend. I don't know when it happens. I just pray, like most Jets fans, I think, that it happens, right? Like, we heard Chevy try to make some big things go down here at the expansion draft, and it was unable to happen. So it makes you think, they are trying to accomplish something. They are trying to acquire something here. With a number of UFA goalies available, you'd think that's going to take care of itself fairly easily. And what's the more difficult of the two here, really? Probably acquiring, when you look at the UFAs for defensemen, there's nothing real juicy or all that intriguing or interesting or certainly cost-effective that's sitting there for the Jets. So that's going to make some wheeling and dealing, and let's hope that that gets done soon. To quell and put at rest all the Jets fans' concerns that nothing's going to happen here. That let's not have that happen. Go do something, and the sooner it's accomplished, the better for everybody involved.
You know what? I am actually going to be optimistic about this, and I think they are going to make a trade.
I do, too.
At the draft.
So do I.
I hope you guys are right.
With number one. Not the number one overall pick, but with the number one, with their first rounder. Just because it always seems like when Chevy has a target or is seemingly intent on going down a certain path, that's where the Jets usually tend to go. And you saw it at the deadline when they made the playoffs, where they wanted to acquire some depth. Chevy went out there and got Stepniak and Tolusti. And I feel like with what was said yesterday and just seemingly how much Chevy does feel like they need to be aggressive, and I think he used the term or he used the phrase something along the lines of, we've been drafting and developing for so long, now it's time to kind of alter our path. And I'm paraphrasing there, but it was something along those lines. And I feel like they are going to be aggressive with this. And I don't know who it is. I have absolutely no idea who the player might be. But I feel like this is the time that Chevy does go out there and finally makes a trade to get that defenseman on this team.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know if it's with the 24th overall pick, but I think that they do a deal or two this weekend, and it could be minor, could be major. The thought process he had there around the Vegas expansion draft and said that we were working on something big and it just didn't work out, and then the comment about the contractual obligations prevented him from doing some other things, which I take as the no-trade clauses that players have. I think they're working diligently, and we've been talking this week, my entire time, even his entire tenure in this city has been talked about him as a general manager, but I think this is what he's been building for, and I think that just like you mentioned about the depth, and when the time is right, just like we talk about with spending, when the time is right, and I think the time is right with assets, and the fact that they kept Toby Enstrom, didn't lose a roster player, they're going to use some of these assets, and I think something's done this weekend and in free agency and going forward, but I do think that there's a deal or two to happen at tonight's draft.
You always present things so gently to me. I get a little bit of a kick out of it. Like this isn't just the time is right. Like this isn't to ease into the boy they're ready. This is almost do or die here, huh? For the Jets this year, like this offseason here.
Do or die,
and what's
but
if you come in and have a team like you had last year, it is do or die for Maurice. It's knocking on a new head coach, which would be your last head coach for Shovel Dayoff. Like for the organization in a large scale sense, boys, and we've touched on this. This is a massive year. This is the year when all the feel good stuff and putting something together and being respectable on the ice is kind of out the door and out the window. Everyone right across the board is expecting this is the major step here, right? The couple of pieces missing in the past, there'd be five or seven things maybe the team needed, but now we've got it all boiled down to get that additional goaltender, go get help for the blue line on the left side, and then let's give her, boys, right? So it's he can go and accomplish what's needed very easily here.
I prefer to think of it as a voice of reason more than gentle or ease you in.
Sounds very gentle to me.
Look me in the eye,
fence-ish.
Troy. Let me hold you through this process. Take my hand.
I think you get a lot of splinters sometimes.
Can you play some REO Speedwagon? TSN 1290 is excited for the 2017 Winnipeg Jets Draft Party presented by SportCheck this tonight, the 23rd at Club Region Event Center. Josh Morrissey, Kyle Connor, Jack Rossovic will host the event. All fans in attendance will receive an exclusive 2017 Draft Party giveaway, dinner and beverage, and a chance to win prizes valued at over $5,000. Tickets are on sale. Visit winnipegjets.com or ticketmaster.ca. More information at tsn1290.ca. It is tonight, and we have two tickets to give away right now. 12th caller through, 780-1290. I'm putting Brandon on the spot. He's got to do Sports Center, so hang tough if you're trying to get in for these tickets. 780-1290, 12th caller through, and the six-pack is next on The Big Show. TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the Canadian Mental Health Association and Ride Don't Hide. Sunday, June 25th, starting at Vimy Ridge Park. Pit stops will include the Manitoba Legislative Building and Canadian Museum for Human Rights. Funds raised will help support programs dedicated to youth mental health, workplace mental health, and family support initiatives. To learn more or to register, visit RideDon'tHide.com. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Reminder, live coverage from the draft in Chicago for the National Hockey League starts at 3 today with the afternoon ride, Husser and Paul Edmonds, and then they'll go into the first round of the draft, of course, and have the Jets' first selection this year, and then they'll be alive all day as well tomorrow, starting at 9 a.m. for rounds 2 till 7. Rick Ralph will tee a lot of it up as well in the Don Vito Roundtable starting at 11. Boss Pete's fan line will be open at 9. Get your thoughts on what the Jets will do and who they should take and if there'll be any more moves and the Eberle trade and everything else going on in the start of the CFL season. Congratulations to Paul Duick, was it?
Yeah, Paul Duick. And he's actually super pumped not only for the draft party tickets but for the six pack here. And he gave me a couple tips on the phone. So he's ready to go, and so
tips.
Are we.
Tips. Now we're getting tips.
Dewey.
Congratulations, Paul. Paulo, Pauly. Well, Pauly, you wanted it. You got it. It's the six pack. Fire it up. It's Friday. It's raining out. Thunderstorms sometimes come all around you when it's the six pack. Only two wins last week. We heard about it on Twitter. What went wrong? What didn't go wrong? Some things went right. CFL seasons abound. I'm going to be riding some CFL and some baseball. Looking at the starting pitchers right now, feeling it. That's right, I've been researching for 3 days for this. Actually, 3 minutes. So here we go. Get your money out. Get your pencil ready. Always make your picks in pencil. That way you can change them. There's some small advice from us here at The Big Show. And REO Speedwagon. Voices of Reason, REO Speedwagon. Can't fight this feeling any longer. Let's go! Canadian Football League started last night. I like everything about the Hamilton Tiger Cats this year. I like Zach Kolaros. I went in the TSN Fantasy League that Husser and Remus have. You guys should go in that. My quarterback was Zach Kolaros. $9K it cost me. $9K! Still, they're in Toronto. Toronto's paying $305. I kind of like Toronto. I like Brandon Whitaker. I like Ricky Ray. But I don't know who's on their defense. And I really like the Hamilton defense because Jeff freaking Reinbold is a defensive coordinator in Steeltown, Hammer City. Never a guy to shy away from. What is that smell? It's the city of Hamilton. But they're in Toronto this weekend, going down the highway, paying $180. I dig it. I think Zach's going to have a big year. I think the Tiger Cats defense is going to be good. As I once heard in another career, always trust the frosty tips. Well, Jeff Reinbold has frosty tips. A little soul glow in it back in the day. An earring. Didn't he have an earring, Westy?
He had a few things, yeah.
Shark tooth necklace. The whole hang loose vibe with the hand. Loving Coach Reinbold and what he's bringing. Going to take some heat to Ricky Ray. Take the Tie Cats in T.O. paying 180. Brandon.
Well, let's stick with the CFL. And this, I mean, the marquee game of the week. We got ourselves a rematch, boys. Woo! Calgary going back into Ottawa and looking for a bit of revenge as the Stampeders take on the champion Red Blacks. And a bit of a different taste to this one as well, because Trevor Harris will be leading the boys in, I guess, red and black in this one here. But Trevor Harris, people forget how strong I think Trevor Harris was to kick off last season. And he faced the Stampeders twice during the regular season last year. And Harris threw for 403 TDs on July 8th, and then 302 TDs on September 17th. So I got a feeling that a lot of people are thinking the Stamps are going to roll right in. Rolling. Levi Mitchell, two first names. That's rolling. A bad start. They're thinking the Stamps are just going to come in here and waltz into Ottawa and grab a W and get a bit of revenge. I don't necessarily see it that way. Oh. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. Maybe Ottawa wins. Maybe they don't. You know what that means, right, boys? We're back into Ty City. Oh. Ty Domi, 3.4. It's time to get back on the winning wagon, and we got to do it by upping the ante a little bit. So we'll start off with our first tie in a long time. I think since Italy went into OT against, I don't even remember, Slovakia, I think it was.
Viva la Italia.
And that one worked out pretty well for us. So we'll take the tie here. Calgary, Ottawa, I don't know who wins. Don't really care. I think it'll be a close one, though, decided late by a field goal. And it's paying 3-4, so let's roll with that.
3.40 gets the juices flowing. Westy.
Darn it, you took a tie, did you?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to stay in the CFL, boys.
Sister kisser.
Stay in the CFL, go to Edmonton at BC. Super geek to see what BC brings to the table. And it seems like the hot, sexy sort of dark horse pick here is to pick Jonathan Jennings as the most outstanding player in the CFL. And I'm jumping on that as well, picking BC to ultimately win the West. But they got their hands full and some question marks defensively for BC. There's been some change. There's been some turnover. But I know the Don is on the sidelines for the BC Lions. And he's a reasonable man. One of two things are going to be on the field in BC. Either a win or your brains. It's up to you.
Wow.
The BC Lions are going to win this game. But the Don, the Don's going to do it. He's going to pull it out. Jonathan Jennings is going to have a big night. But I think Mike Riley is going to have a big night as well. The over-under on this game is 58.5. There's going to be points. That scoreboard might explode in BC. Coming up, and I'm going to go tie as well. I think it's going to be a big back and forth type affair. The BC Lions will start out 1-0, but take the 3.4, sucker, and take the tie in BC.
Two ties. We should make it three. That would be outstanding. Should I reverse? No. Hamilton will hammer the Argos, I believe. Two ties to get it going. Late night this week, I've been watching the Dodgers hammer the New York Mets. Yasiel Puig told somebody to go make love to himself. I saw it. He said it. Not that way, but he still said it. Go make love to yourself. But he said it in different terms. However, the Dodgers have been ripping the cover off the ball. And that's why I like the Colorado Rockies. It's got to come back down to earth. And the Colorado Rockies have been also ripping the cover off the ball. And the reason I also like this pick is because it's paying 230 in a baseball game.
Jeez.
You usually play baseball at 230 in the afternoon. You don't get it paying 230. Alex Wood is on the mound. He's 7-0 for the Dodgers, 1.90. Freeland is 8-4 with a 3.42 ERA. Alex Wood is not a 7-0 pitcher. He is not. And the Rockies can rip it. Charlie Blackman looks like the guy who fought the bear in that movie that won an Oscar.
The Revenant.
Yeah. He looks like that guy. And that guy never gave up. Ever. Charlie Blackman doesn't give up. That guy should have died. I would have given up. But he kept going. And the Rockies go into the Dodgers. The Dodgers are riding high. Puig's telling people to go make love to themselves. They're not focused. Take the Rockies. Freeland over the wood. If you want to be free, baby, be free in the land. And you're going to need some wood to burn. Take the Rockies paying $230 today.
So you said that there's not too many games that are paying $230 in baseball?
Oh,
not too many.
Not too many.
Italy's not playing the US of A here, are they?
This might as well be Team Italy, the Philadelphia Phillies. Oh, that's right. It's been a tough season in Philly. But guess what? And we're going to get to the pitching matchup in a second, because the pitching matchup is by far the best part of tonight's game. But I'm going with the heart a little bit here. And June 23rd in Philadelphia sports has not been a kind date. That's changing tonight.
Because
the Philadelphia Flyers will be selecting Nolan Patrick with the second overall pick. Unfortunately, that's not on the pro line, or else we would have been dangling with that one a little bit.
You can bet on that, though.
But let me tell you this. June 23rd, 2011, Mike Richards, Jeff Carter traded. Ilya Brizgalov signed. 2012,
the bridge.
James Van Riemsdyk traded for Luke Shen. 2014, Scott Hartnell traded. 2017, it's a new era in Philadelphia. Nolan Patrick's coming to Philly, and the Philadelphia Phillies, they're getting off the schneid against the Diamondbacks. Now, you might be thinking, Brandon, don't the Diamondbacks have the best home record in Major League Baseball? And yes, technically that would be correct.
You got that right.
But Patrick Corbin, starting tonight for the D-backs. He was supposed to pitch yesterday, but that was flipped last second, and he's going tonight. He had weekend plans booked to the nines already, and now he's got to cancel all those. His head's not in the right shape of mind.
He's going to get a haircut.
Now, who are the Phillies going with tonight on the mound? TBD. They don't even have a starter picked out for tonight.
Could be me.
That's a great sign. TBD.
Could be
to
Westwood.
Be determined who's going to be the winner. It won't be TBD for the six-pack because the Phillies are going to pull it off. Paul Goldschmidt, too, has the lowest career average against the Phillies than any other NL opponent. They're shutting down Goldschmidt. They're shutting down the D-backs. And the Phillies pick up a win in Arizona tonight. They've won four in a row. In Arizona, they make it five tonight, paying 2-3.
You want to get nuts? We just got nuts!
I'm going to stick on the diamond, and I'm going to go to my boys, the New York Yankees.
Ooh.
Aaron, I'm pregnant! I still want Aaron Judge's baby. I don't care how difficult it might be scientifically. I'm going to figure something out.
Sounds like a Schwarzenegger movie.
We got a fantastic matchup tonight with a little bit of Darvish and a little bit of Tanaka. It's a whole lot of dangle out in the mounds.
I hear you Tanakin, but you can't come in.
The Yankees are struggling as of late. 1-8 their last 9 games. They're banking big time on Tanaka tonight, who's 0-6 over his last 7 starts.
Awful.
His ERA risen more than 2 runs during that time.
Darvish.
His last outing, 10 strikeouts, but lasted only 4 innings, giving up 5 runs, 3 homers. During a 7-game drought, Tanaka has copped up 15 homers in 33 and a third innings. Tanaka is struggling, and I'm bailing on the Yankees tonight. I'm looking at the Texas Rangers. I'm looking at him.
Yes!
It's time to do a little bit of dangling with Darvish.
You!
Aaron Judge, I still love you. I still want you, baby. I know you've reached base in 24 consecutive games. You probably hit a dinger tonight. But I got to go with the Texas Rangers, boys.
Yes.
We get 175 for it. Go, Rangers, go.
You. We love that pick. I thought you were going Yankees. I was going to hate that pick. I love it, paying 175. You, Darvish. I like it. Gentlemen. I've got the Hamilton Tiger Cats going into Toronto on Sunday, a 3 o'clock game. Great way to spend the afternoon. Paying 180, take the Tiger Cats. I also got the Colorado Rockies and Charlie Blackman rolling on in to L.A. to take on Alex Wood to make them 7-1. First loss of the year, paying 230. Brandon.
I see a football game, and I just can't help myself. I picked the tie. I had to do it. Calgary, Ottawa paid 3.4 tonight. And Philly, on the strength of TBD, their starting pitcher, finds a way to get it done in Zona, paying 2.3.
TBD, I don't like that pick.
Me bouncing out to the mighty West Coast, going Edmonton, BC, a tie, late field goal, BC wins. And that's a nice, juicy, 3.4, boys. And then I'm going looking at the Rangers and the Yankees, and Tanaka gets Tanaka'd by the Rangers and take 1.6 for that one.
Take off
that pinstripe thong. Sorry, 1.75 for that one.
$5 with those six picks will pay you $963.
I'm digging it, dog.
And the age I was the last time I got a pick right, 15. 963.15 for $5. Book it on your six-pack on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Kim Matthew, leave your back gate unlocked because TSN 1290 is coming over. Kim and their friends will be receiving a TSN 1290 tailgate party for up to 25 people, including catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl hot bar with tortillas so we can all make tacos, and an abundance of three cheese queso beverages, including a sampling of Tall Grass Vodka, Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery, a family pack of fireworks to light up your night courtesy of Archangel Fireworks, an iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for each grand prize winner provided by Lux Barbecue Company, and a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of 1 week provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We'll also have the TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve and set up. TSN 1290 has more tailgate parties coming up, including July 20th and August 10th. Visit TSN1290.ca to enter, and we could be seeing you soon. Congratulations, Kim Matthew, and we will see you for a TSN 1290 tailgate party. Looking forward to it. The Big Show on TSN 1290, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and myself, Jim Toth. We just did our six-pack. Book it. $5 pays you $963.15. I like it. I like it a lot. I like it a lot. Draft weekend today starts on, Rick Ralph will tee it up for you in the Don Vito Roundtable at 11. And then at 3 o'clock this afternoon, the Afternoon Ride with Hustler and Paul Edmonds will delve into 3 hours of setup and then live coverage from the draft in Chicago starting at 6. Draft day, before we get into that, your thoughts on the Jets, gentlemen, and your thoughts on the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 a.m. today, 780-1290. We'll talk about the Jordan Eberle trade for Ryan Strome. What are your thoughts?
Another situation. Sherrill is just getting ripped for this in a huge way because of the difference in production being compared to a little bit the haul for Larson. Maybe not quite that dramatic, but knocking on the door of that. An interesting move for sure, saying the cap we discussed earlier, where I think for the most part you got to look at it and think there's a number of variables that come into play here to ultimately finally send an individual who there's been talk for a while about the possible moving of Eberle, a good 2-3 years of being one of the top guys on the trade bait list sort of thing. But ultimately this is likely a move maybe somehow that helps. I like what Edmonton's doing. How can you really stand that strongly against what they're doing here? This trade, I look forward to watching this unfold, boys. I think Strome will be much more successful than he has been up to this point in time, especially if he's on McDavid's wing. Look out to see what he accomplishes in the very near future. And it's quite likely that Eberle will also gain on a personal level on this being out in Long Island again.
Yeah, I think there's a decent chance of this trade working out for both teams, but there's no doubt that the Oilers take on more of the risk involved in that. Strome, he had that 51-point season a couple of years ago, but then it's just been, I don't know, it's just been disastrous for him on the island since that point. So, I mean, if he gets back to being a 45, 50-point guy, then yeah, it's a great trade for both teams. But it's another case, in my opinion, of Peter Chiarelli shipping out the higher talent for lesser talent, which is a bit of a concerning trend if you're an Oilers fan.
I think there's a number of factors that played into this happening, and one of them is Eberle's contract. I think it's Eberle's play. I think what Troy touched on, and would love to know what you think about this trade. as once again the Oilers make another bold move prior to tonight's draft. We'll get into that as well with you on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. CFL season kicked off last night with Darian Durant and the Montreal Alouettes sticking it to Chris Jones and the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Your thoughts on opening night?
Decent game. I was surprised at the level of play by both these teams that most everyone has in the bottom third of the CFL, but absolutely horrible mismanagement, I thought, late in the game by Chris Jones. There's 37 seconds left, and they're on the Montreal 39 for a field goal there. And with those final 37 seconds, they gain an additional 2 yards to send Crapinha out there for a 45-yard field goal. Absolutely ridiculous to settle on a game-winning field goal from that distance when you got 37 seconds to work with. There is no way in the world that they should not have been more aggressive, pick up another 10 yards, and trot him out there for a 35-yarder. Ridiculous that they settled for that. Having said that, Crapinha pushes that. That is the cardinal sin, the ultimate sin for a kicker. You cannot push a big kick like that. It means you didn't put your hips through and around it. So, but an entertaining game, right? Pretty entertaining. And games out at McGill are always fun to watch. And I was pleased with the play of Durant and Kevin Glenn.
Yeah, I think for Bombers fans, if you were worried about Saskatchewan maybe being a bit more of a threat than they were the past year, I think the result of last night couldn't have went better. Like, you want to throw this team into more turmoil. And if the Bombers can pick up a win in the opening of their new stadium next weekend, then things kind of go haywire for Saskatchewan. And like you said, Troy, the 2 games after that, they could be looking at 0-4 and a new head coach a month into the season.
Yeah, they lose a game last night that they should have won,
yep,
probably. And then they could lose a game that, in a similar fashion, next week against the Bombers maybe, and really be 0-2 in an unfair sort of a way. But then you got Hamilton and Calgary and knocking on 0-4. And look out for the temperature in the province to the west.
Your thoughts on the Jordan Eberle trade for Ryan Strome, your thoughts on the start to the CFL season and how the Riders look to Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff was on TSN 1290 yesterday. Said there was a big deal in the works prior to the expansion draft. It didn't work out. Says some contractual obligations have prevented some other moves. I would presume that means no trade clauses. What are your thoughts on the Jets and what they will do and what should they do? What would you like to see them do around tonight's draft and tomorrow as well? And the Winnipeg Jets schedule is out. Are you going to Vegas on the 10th? Let us know. 780-1290, the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Anything and everything next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
What greater gift is there than the gift of life? That's exactly what every blood donation delivers. Blood and blood products are a critical part of everyday medical care, including major surgeries, medical procedures, cancer treatments, and managing disease. This Canada Day, Canadian Blood Services is hoping you can make a donation. The Canadian Blood Services location at 777 William Avenue will be open 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. To book your appointment, you can call 1-888-2-DONATE. Or visit blood.ca. Walk-ins are welcome once again at 777 William Avenue. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. And, of course, your phone calls. You can give us a shout at 780-1290 or text 129090 with standard message rate supplying to get in on the conversation of the Jordan Eberle trade, the start to the CFL season. Dave Tippett is no longer in Arizona, what your thoughts are on that move, and of course what you think the Jets should do, what you hope they do, the draft, everything else going on this weekend, which we will have exclusive in-depth coverage live from Chicago beginning at 3 this afternoon. 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Darren, you're kicking us off today on The Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey guys, happy draft day.
Yes, same to you.
Listen, I know you guys have a bit of a love-hate for random trade proposals, but it's draft day, so if there was ever going to be a bunch of trades or big deals, I think today's the day. So I'm going to throw some at you. I'm going to explain them, and then I'll let you discuss them. So,
by all means.
All right. My first one is, this one is part of a prelude, kind of comes before two trade proposals on the second one. But my first one is Matthew Perreault is going to be dealt to the Islanders for Travis Hamonic. We're finally bringing him home. And then that brings us a right side D, so you know where I'm going next. I have two options for Trouba. I honestly believe Trouba could be dealt today. The first one would be to the Flyers for Sean Couturier and bringing another Winnipegger, their top left-hand prospect who's probably NHL ready this year, Sanheim. Couturier would give us our number one shutdown center and immediately improve our penalty kill. Or the second option for Trouba would be we flip him to Colorado and let him and his big buddy cop go to Colorado for Nathan MacKinnon. So big moves are happening today, fellas. I don't see a reason to bring in a goalie this week. I mean, we're 7 days away from free agency, so I can't see why a trade that is going to happen today can't happen in a week when we can at least talk to Elliott or Mason and see if we can get those guys for free before making a trade. So those are my thoughts. I'm going to get out of the way, let you guys talk about it, and have a great weekend and enjoy the draft.
Darren, before you go, you just blew my mind, and it's not for what you think. It's because you just reminded me that it's only 7 days away till free agency. I was like,
I know, that's why I just don't see why would we make a trade for a goalie right now when, you know, I mean, Elliott and Mason are both excellent options. So if we can have those guys for free in 7 days, and I really only see Arizona maybe competing with us for those guys. Especially because Philly now didn't lose a goalie, so they still have, you know, Nuverth and Stolaraz or whatever. So I don't know if the competition's steep for Mason or Elliott. So why would we make a trade right now when we can wait a week and see if those guys want to come here?
Yeah, great stuff, Darren. We appreciate it. On the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. What are your thoughts on those and anything else regarding the Jets and the draft as well? We'll start with Perreault for Hamonic.
Yeah, that ain't going to work. Right, they want a whole lot more than Perreault for Hamonic. And B, is don't see, unless Trouba's on his way out, which I don't think is happening right away, to acquire another right-hand guy, that's not going to happen either.
Yeah, I don't see
as
Hamonic.
As much as I love the story.
I don't see Hamonic coming here unless you're going to move Meyer. Like, where do you compare the two, Myers and Hamonic? Are they the same? Is one better than the other?
I don't even think, because of the injuries and concerns, until Meyer settles in and gives you 75 games or even 70 games, I don't even think,
you'd feel safer with Hamonic, wouldn't you?
100 times more.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of like Myers a little better.
How can you like a guy right now and looking at, like, how can he even make that statement with all the injury concerns going forward until he shows you that he's healthy for a bit?
I think law of averages. He's going to be healthy eventually. He's gone through a ton of injuries. I don't think he's going to continue to. He's in excellent shape. And
you know, the analytics crew just had a heart attack, you saying law of averages when it comes to injury.
Yeah, well, the analytics. I use analytics.
Any
science, I trust it. I don't go all in on it. So, and that's the thing with analytics, is there's other parts to this that you have to weigh into it. And I think offensively, Tyler Myers is better than Travis Hamonic too. So defensively, if they're relatively the same, I'll give the edge to Myers personally. But I don't see Hamonic coming here, given I don't have Trouba going anywhere. Do you guys think Trouba gets dealt?
No.
I would be shocked.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I don't think that deal exists yet. I think it will, but I don't think right now it does for the Jets. Because they're one of the rare teams where, like, the Islanders want to trade Hamonic, but they want a forward back. Like, that's generally what it is, right? You trade a defenseman for a forward for a defenseman. The Jets aren't in that boat where they need a defenseman for a defenseman. And I just, I mean, the Trouba trades he offered were, I think, fair value trades, but I just don't think there is one out there for him just yet. And I don't think the Jets want to move him at all.
No.
Until they're forced to.
780-1290, if you want to weigh in on the conversation on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, if he was to be dealt, would you take Sanheim and Couturier for Jacob Trouba?
No. If Jacob Trouba goes, there's a massive void in the back end.
Yeah, you want someone more.
You have to
NHL ready and experience, right?
You need to basically plug someone in on the left side. Bam, with this group here, and plus, I think with the level of the critical element of the year this year, I don't think there's zero chance of them moving Trouba right now.
Would you trade Trouba to Colorado for Kopp with Kopp for Nathan MacKinnon?
Why would you have to include Kopp to go get MacKinnon?
Because I would imagine if you're going to take off a number one,
well, that's not a good trade then. No way. And again, you know what?
It doesn't help. It doesn't solve a problem of
still,
need.
You have a huge problem if you do that.
The trade for me, the trade for Trouba is Jacob Trouba for a left-handed Jacob Trouba. Mm-hmm. That trade isn't out there just yet.
And how? Yeah, it'll take. It's going to take a bit of a miracle.
It's going to take the exact same situation that Jacob Trouba was in last year for this to basically work into the Jets' favor. And if not, they're going to have to do some major wheeling and dealing in terms of maybe they bring in the forward guy in and then they trade one of their own forward. Like, it's, I don't know. It just seems like there's too many moving parts to a Trouba trade right now.
To me, I think it's a Jacob Trouba for a younger potential left-handed Jacob Trouba. I don't think you're going to get equal value. I think what you're going to do is get a younger left-handed D that you hope could turn into that. And what you're going to gain is, you know, the reason that the Sanheim is interesting is because just he would be a guy coming in where you have his full career ahead of him. Like, that would be the bonus compared to a guy like Trouba going into his third contract, stuff like that. But I think there would have to be some other parts involved in it to make the Jets do that. I just don't think you're going to get equal value at the position because I don't think it exists right now.
And if that happens, you're gonna string along his status as long as you can, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. They're not even close to being at that point with him.
Yeah. Like why trade him if you're going to get lesser value?
Yeah.
And you're not forced to trade him right now because you have him for three more years under a contract under team control.
And you know he's got to play his ass off for you for the big chunky contract once he is free, right?
You know, if you're Trouba, wouldn't you sign a long-term deal? Because the money's going to be what the money's going to be. Like if it's going to be $7 million a year.
Not if he doesn't want to be here, JT.
No, I know, but
if the American thing is true.
Well, okay, but listen to me. If you sign the long-term deal and still ask for a trade, the money isn't what's holding up the deal. I don't think the Jets aren't willing to pay him what a Philadelphia would if he got traded there or another American-based team. So why not sign the deal for the length of the money and still ask for a trade?
Well, because they can try for a trade for the next 5 or 6 years and fail. This way, the worst-case scenario is come the year when the year pops up that he is a UFA, then he's gone. He's instead of needing for Winnipeg to find the perfect thing to happen for him to be able to be traded. That's why he will never sign a long-term deal if he has intent to leave.
I get what you're saying, where maybe if you sign the long-term contract, it makes you easier to trade to
a
team.
I'm thinking of Vander Kane. Got a $6 million a year deal and still asked for a trade. And asked for a trade prior and asked for a year after the trade. And then he got dealt. The money's going to be the money, so why don't you just...
I get your thought. I get the thought process, but... I mean, if that's the point, if it gets to that point, all Chevy has to do is, hey, we're trying to trade you. I just can't find the deal.
That's all he's
right?
going to say, yep. Yeah.
But then you could hold out then. You could do it for two years or whatever, just go, you got to trade me because I'm not coming back. I've done this for two seasons.
Why would you sign that contract? There's no positive in signing
sign
that contract.
It? Because you have JT. Because you have the money guaranteed then.
Jacob Trouba's money is going to be guaranteed. He's not going to be all scared of what he's going to suffer some sort of life-altering injury. He's not going to approach it like that, man. He's playing. If he wants to leave, he's going to play this out. They're playing poker, right? He's not going to sign a long-term contract and leave it up to Sheveldeff and just to find a perfect match.
Well, then this poker hand's another 3 years.
Yeah, and he'll endure that, and then he'll be able to get down to the States if that's ultimately what he wants.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think he's here for the 3 years. And I think if you were offered a 7-year deal, then you just sign it, get the money, and go, I want out still, as time goes on. Waiting 3 years to get paid big-time money and long-term money is a long time. We're not talking about like a year away from free agency.
He's still going to get paid pretty well, and then he has arbitration rights, man. He's not going to be playing... cheaply.
I think if there is a Trouba trade, and I ultimately do think there is one, just because of the holdout history we've seen between players and team, at least recently within the last 5 years or so, where eventually everyone that's held out has been moved. I think it happens at the end of next season, when this current contract comes up. It very similar to what we saw with Jonathan Drouin, where once the money starts to kind of become an issue and that sort of thing. I think you'll see managers, more specifically Chevy, if he's still here, that's the time you kind of make a move.
Yeah, I think he signs another bridge deal is like worst case scenario. And then I think that at the end of that second bridge deal, when looking at free agency, I think that's when he gets dealt, if he gets dealt.
Well, there's no long-term deal in what you just said.
I know that. I'm bringing up the suggestion. If you're Trouba, why wouldn't you? Evander Kane did it and got traded. Zach Bogosian did it and got traded. Like the idea of sitting here, my thought process is, if you're Jacob Trouba, the idea of, regardless of where you play, the money's going to be the money. It's not like Winnipeg's not willing to pay you the money, or some other team is offering you way more money. The what you're going to be worth is predominantly what you're going to be worth. Like, he's going to get Drew Doughty money or something like that, whether it's here or somewhere else. So my point is, if you're going to be here for 3 years minimum anyway, why not sign a 7-year deal and keep asking for a trade if that's what you want?
I know, man. You made your point. And maybe we already countered why we don't think that'll happen.
780-1290 on the Big Show. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, of course, the draft, the Jets, the Eberle trade, CFL, and everything else as well. And also, before we go a break, we want to let you know that TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. To enter, rally friends and family in your community to make a video about your hometown. Tell us how $25,000 could make it an even better place to live. Record a video telling us about your hometown and how they would spend $25,000. Send it to us at tsn1290.ca before noon on July the 14th. That's a Friday. 10 finalists will be revealed on Monday, July 24th. Then the public will vote for a winner to receive the $25,000. Manitobaville, make your hometown even prouder. Presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Starter Ready to Move Homes, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and Merrick Contractors. For more info and official rules and regulations, visit tsn1290.ca. More of your calls and your thoughts on the draft, and would you deal Trouba right now if you could at this year's draft? 780-1290 next on The Big Show.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Boston Pizza fan line open, 780-1290 here on the Big Show. And TSN1290 is proud to sponsor Bike Week Winnipeg. And today's Bike to Work Day. To celebrate, our friends at Alter Ego Sports on Pembina have given us brand new bikes to give away as part of our Off the Chain contest. Today's fifth and final bike winner is Tracy Stasnek. Tracy has won a 2017 Cannondale Quick 8 bicycle from Alter Ego Sports. The Cannondale has a nimble aluminum frame, durable Duro tires, and fast rims to get Tracy to and from work this morning a lot quicker. For more info on the Cannondale and any other ride you might be considering, visit alteregosports.com. Off the Chain, thanks to our bike supplier, Alter Ego Sports. And thanks to everyone who took time to enter our contest this week. Enjoy the rest of Bike Week Winnipeg. And also yesterday, I forgot to get to this, Tim Cornborough. Tim, you've also won a bike from Alter Ego Sports for Bike Week. Congratulations to both Tim and Tracy. I believe I know Tim. I believe I won a fifth division touch football championship in this city with Tim like 10 years ago. Touch football, Westy.
I didn't know they had that many divisions.
I am a champion. I got a ring, and you don't. Well, it's a T-shirt, but I still have a T-shirt. That was a long time ago. Tight ends, they matter.
Tight ends and touch, huh?
Especially touch football.
Don't tight end guy, normally you'd be snapping at the same time, right?
Tight end's your first down guy.
I played a little bit. That's how I actually got in. That's how I got my scholarship, ultimately, was playing in the Manitoba Touch Football League, boys, really. I was playing on a team with my uncles. They kept saying I used to be a receiver, a DB, and would punt and kick off. And after the kickoffs, you got to go show the bomber so I can kick. I'm like, no, just go show. And then I just literally took the bus, knocked on the door. Jane was working there, who worked there once I got drafted. I said, hi there, is there a coach that would please watch me kick? She went and got Urban Bowman. We walked out to the field. He watched me kick. We go back into his office. He calls Purdue University. They offer me a half scholarship over the phone. Can't afford the other half. I go back to waiting to get into the U of M, working at Coles Bookstore. Augustana calls me from South Dakota, who is friends with Jim Gregory, who is coaching in Saskatchewan, who is friends with Urban Bowman. Drive down, 50-yarder, sign a 4-year full ride. Drive home.
Really?
True.
You made it happen.
That's all from playing touch football and my uncles and friends from the mighty Brooklyn Bombers who went to the Nationals. They convinced me to go show the Bombers how I could kick.
I have a similar story that didn't work out for me. We have somebody on the Boss Pizza family.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Well, let's get to that. But remind me.
Oh, you got to tell us the story.
It involves Coach Dobie.
Your stories are always beauty.
Well, they just I told Coach Dobie for years I could kick. I kicked a 54-yarder in high school and stuff. Uh-huh. He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they had this media one during the Bison season, yeah, which I was covering for Shaw TV. So at halftime, two media members would come out and have you'd have to kick a, I don't know, a 25, 30, mm-hmm, or 35-yarder. And I had to go up against Dave Wheeler.
Yeah.
And I smoked my 35-yarder for about 47 yards through. Uh-huh. And Dobie, because I've been telling him for years of covering the Bisons I could do this, stayed out at halftime to watch. And then he said next year they had a lull right before the Vanier Cup team. And he said, if you want to – I'll get you three courses if you want to do this. And I actually proposed it to Shaw to, like, make a reality show out of it, uh-huh, which is weird because I hate all reality shows. But I'm like, let's make a story out of this, and I'll take three courses and – and it just didn't work out with work wise. And they're like, what are you?
You'd be one of the men on the plane. You ever... I remember when
I would have
in
been
college,
like a 35 year old rookie.
We had a 31 year old ex Marine as a safety for a couple of years when I was at Augustana.
Wow.
And he was playing against, you know, kids. And the guy was just all tatted up and gnarly and nasty. It was crazy.
More on this story, but first we'll get to the Boss Pizza fan line 780-1290. Who's waiting?
Mike.
Mike, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So, if you believe Chevy, if you take Chevy at his word, do you think it was a deal with to bring Fleury here? Or do you think it was a deal to bring...
I don't think so with Fleury.
I thought it was Mathot.
You think it was Mathot?
No trade.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why it didn't go through.
Well, why wouldn't it have gone through?
Because the Jets are on the no-trade list.
He doesn't have a no-trade.
Mathot does.
Yes, he does.
He's not listed in Cap Geek. He's got no trade.
Darren Drager reported this morning that all six Canadian teams, other than the Senators, yeah, are on the no trade list.
Can you believe that? He's a Canadian boy, and all the Canadian teams except for doggone.
Well, I don't necessarily. Well, somebody's definitely wrong.
Well, go to Cap Friendly then.
Hamlin and Garrison has no trade.
Go to Cap Friendly. He's got a modified no trade clause.
I got it right here. Modified no trade clause. 10-team no trade, and six of those 10 teams are the rest of the Canadian ones.
Okay, then this one I'm on is not up to date.
Someone's got to feed Don Cherry that one, huh? Someone's got to feed Don Cherry, yeah, the fact that Mathot's got a no trade to Canadian teams everywhere except for Ottawa, and he's a Canadian kid.
Yeah, and I don't think it was Fleury, Mike, because Marc-Andre Fleury has said and has been since this was put together that he's more than happy to stay in Vegas and that his no trade, I think, kicks in again now that he's there, and he said he won't be waiving it.
Okay, well, that's number. Is there anybody on Vegas' defense that you would make a move for?
Well, you know who I like is the two guys they got. I really like Nate Schmidt, but if I don't make that deal if I'm Vegas. And I like Shea Theodore, and I don't make that deal if I'm Vegas.
I like Colin Miller. All of them, all of their defensemen except for Mark
Mathot, yeah,
1 year and then either a UFA or a restrict. Like, all of them are on 1 year and then UFA or RFAs. I like Colin Miller.
They've got nine guys on that D that are all left shooting guys.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of them that I wouldn't like. I mean, I don't think Clayton Stoner would be a nice fit. Lucas Spezza, I don't think. But, I mean, if you get Theodore or Nate Schmidt, I think that'd be great. 25, 21 years old. Theodore's still on an entry-level deal. But, I'm Vegas, I don't make that trade.
Give Theodore away. No chance. Emlyn, you could probably go snatch.
Great stuff, Mike. We appreciate it. We'll take more of your calls, 780-1290, when the Big Show returns. TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Alter Ego Sports and Tim Hortons are proud to present the TSN 1290 Street Team, popping up at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity events, and more. And we'll be bringing you our Spin to Win prize wheel to elect select events and giving you a chance to win great stuff like tickets to Bruno Mars or a Cannondale Quick 8 bicycle from our friends at Alter Ego Sports. Here's where you can find us in the next little bit. The Winnipeg Jazz Festival on now till the June 25th. Ride, Don't Hide for the Canadian Mental Health Association this Sunday, the 25th, and the University of Winnipeg Westman Golf Tournament Thursday, June 29th. For more info on these great events and the TSN 1290 Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show. 780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversation. And that's what stuck out to me about the conversation Kevin Cheveldayoff had as well on the afternoon ride yesterday, was there was a big deal in the works, and eventually it just got to the point where they had to refocus and sort of protect whom they protected and went a different direction. And just a comment yesterday as well that during the media availability at 1:30, that there are some deals, a lot of deals are not going through because of contractual obligations, and I would assume those are no trade clauses. So anything and everything today, going to the Jets and everything else, 780-1290.
Do you guys think that there's another Canadian out there that has all the Canadian teams except his hometown on a no-trade list? Like, isn't that something else?
Well, he's from Ottawa, so I can understand. Like, maybe he did it because he just wants to only play for his hometown. And like I could see why an Ottawa kid playing for the Ottawa Senators doesn't want to go to Toronto. Doesn't want to go to Montreal.
I could see the Montreal-Toronto aspect of it.
Really?
Well, if you're from Ottawa, that's blasphemy. Playing for one of those two teams, your arch rivals. The other ones, it's kind of confusing. But I guess if you like it on the east, then maybe you don't want to go out west.
Isn't it outrageous from a Canadian? Like, really, man? Really?
Well,
I don't think he's like, if you're married to an American girl and something like that, I would understand that. But Wikipedia, I don't think he's married.
Well, and then like taxes. And I know our buddy Matt, who listens, weighed in and said the taxes in California and some other states are the same or higher.
Sure.
But they're so relatively close that that's my point of, if you're going to pay the same tax in California, then it comes down to you're playing in California compared to Winnipeg or Calgary or Edmonton. Or like the taxes have to be, to me, they can't even be equal, or you're going to choose a city in the States.
Well, and then some are beyond ridiculous, right? A la Florida and Texas.
Yeah, there's
places
no
like
tax
that
in Florida. Mm-hmm. And so it does weigh into some things. It is interesting, but I don't know. Like, he's only got a 10 team, and six of them are Canadian teams. Makes me wonder what the four in the States are for Mark.
Yeah, no kidding, huh?
Yeah, Minnesota. Whatever's closest to Canada, apparently.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
Buffalo would have to. Pittsburgh.
Two,
like,
yeah,
those
two New York teams. There you go.
Like, it seems weird.
The
because
two armpits of America, Buffalo and Pittsburgh.
Because you're...
Yes.
You're bringing up the point of a Canadian kid playing in Canada, but I hear this all the time from a ton of Canadian hockey players who just go, like I'm from Lethbridge, and they're like, do you want to move back to Lethbridge? Like, if you could, and do what you do and do all this. And I'm like, not really. Like, I go there and visit, and I'm happy to be from there.
Ottawa.
I'm proud and all that. And they said, well, that's just it. Like, if I'm from Humboldt, Saskatchewan, or if I'm from Ottawa, or if I'm from New Brunswick, like, I love my home. I was raised there. I'm very proud to be from there. But if I have the chance to live 8 months of the year in
somewhere with palm trees,
North Carolina or Minnesota or like a major U.S. city, I'm going to do it. And I spend my off season back home anyway, so like, why not spend 8 months of the year doing what you do and in a major U.S. city? Hmm. And I understand that philosophy. I'm a proud Canadian, proud of everything, but I understand guys who, you know, are making six figures to multi-million dollars going. There are a lot of Canadian guys who are from Saskatchewan that spend the summer in Kelowna and have places there and, you know, go home to visit their, like, Jared Stoll is a prime example. I covered him in juniors from Yorkton, Saskatchewan. He goes back there with Aaron Andrews and all the other ladies he's dated every summer for 2 weeks, but he doesn't spend the summer there and he doesn't go home there, and he's more than happy to...
Well, there's a guy from Canada hanging out in Canada in the off season. That has nothing to do with no... I won't take a deal going anywhere in Canada. That to me...
Yeah,
I would love to hear Don Cherry with one of her rants with this sucker. Someone needs to let him know that.
It'll be interesting if he does waive, though, because it seems like the teams that have the highest interest, and I think there's a lot of people that want Mark Methot, are like the Torontos and the Montreals.
Yeah.
And Winnipeg, even.
And Winnipeg.
Like, I think all the teams that are most interested are Canadian teams.
For me as a player, if I'm Mark Methot right now, I'm looking at the teams, and I don't care what the city is. And if I'm looking at like a Montreal and Carey Price and a chance to win, that's what I'm looking at, in all honesty. And maybe hockey players think of it a different way, but I sit down and like if Buffalo's number one in the East and they say we're looking at trading for you, I'm like, if I got a chance to win a cup, I'm going to Buffalo. But I know the majority of players don't think that way. And I know the majority of players have wives and families who go, I'm not going to Buffalo or Winnipeg or whatever.
But I think when you get to the age of a Mark Methot and when you haven't hoisted the cup, as each year goes by, that becomes more and more of a thing, right? In your quest for the Holy Grail, as you get closer, you're walking on the back nine and you know, you're somewhere in 16 or 17, starting to look at you can see the finish, sort of, that you start taking into consideration, where can I go to rebork this thing?
Like, right? what's the future in Toronto right now? Like, if you were a veteran...
You'd want to go.
That's what I mean, like...
Yeah, and just hang on for dear life. Like, what are they going to do? What are they going to get done?
And then maybe it's the media. Like, I know some hockey players who are Canadian and just actually say that, like, I'm not a big fan of...
The fishbowl.
Yeah. Like, I know a couple guys who played in Dallas, and they're like, I'd be in the grocery store and get the odd good luck tonight, and that was the extent of it.
Yeah, yeah. That would be a big thing for sure for a lot of guys.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, talk Jets, talk draft. Anyway, so my story, I never got to be a kicker because when I was thinking of it, I tried to make it work with work, and then Brian Dobie recruited a all-star kicker named Scott Dixon who came in and won a Vanier Cup for him. So even if I could have made it work, my point is Dobie would have said, sorry, I didn't know this kid was going to commit. But I could have been a Troy Westwood is my point. I could have had a long career.
Wow, that's a stretch.
That is a very big stretch. But I still have a T-shirt from a fifth division touch football championship in the city with Tim Cornbow, who won a bike from Alter Ego Sports. So congratulations, Timmy. 780-1290, who's next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line?
It's another Mike.
Mike, go ahead.
Hey, guys. This no trade thing, I've said this for a long time, and I'll say it again. Until these clauses get taken away from the CBA, it is going to be very tough for the Winnipeg Jets and other teams in Canada and even some of the States teams because of the market. And at the end of the day, that needs to be taken out. The owners are the owners. You're drafted to go to a team. The contract shouldn't have a no-trade, no-movement clause. This is tying the hands of teams to progress and get top-quality players to help their team get to that Stanley Cup.
I agree 100%, Mike, but you might not have hockey for 2 years in a lockout if you try and remove those clauses at this point.
But I don't think that the players can afford to not play for 2 years. They need to play. They need that money. They're getting paid millions of dollars, Troy,
yeah,
and they
agree.
Need to pay. And I've heard you say this. You've said it before. Lots of other guys have said, if it takes a long lockout, then let's take it. Because when this gets changed, you'll see a fair playing ballpark across the entire league.
I would love to see it, Mike. I so 100% agree with you. It would be tremendous to see, but I don't know if it's ever going to come to fruition. That would be a declaration of war, that's for sure, between the PA and the owners. But, man, I'm in your corner. I'd love to see it.
You know, the other side of this, Mike, though, is like, so one team will sit down and go, I'm not going to give you no trade, but here's the money. And another team, another GM, they're their own worst enemies, will go, I'll give you no trade if that's the difference.
But the owners themselves, Jim, have to follow the suit. If they all get on the same damn page, and this is the problem, it's I want to do what I want to do, and if I want to not give them a no trade, I can and I can't. But then if they need to trade that player, and he says, I'm not going to Winnipeg, and he doesn't do a sweet deal where Toby Anstrup says, I'll waive it for you, they're tied to that.
No, I understand. Like, what I'm saying is, like, we talk about giving it to the players, but that's the problem is they're not aligned on this. Like, 10 GMs will say yes, and then one GM will go, well, if 10 GMs are telling you they won't give you no trade, I will. And
yeah,
that's how they negotiate to get a guy to come. And then, so that's how they got to be so prominent, is that it just got to the point where third-line grinders and fourth-line grinders, were getting – it just became an automatic.
But it's so ridiculous that you have guaranteed contracts and that. Like, the NHL, the PA does a lot of things, maybe not the perfectly for the players, but to have both of those things in your corner, I'd love to – I'm just trying to find out where was the first no-trade clause or no-move clause that ever came up, I wonder.
Probably given out by Paul Holmgren. But – You wonder if there's a happy medium of some sort where instead of completely getting rid of them, which would be the ideal thing, but I agree where I just don't know if there's a way that's happening. But maybe you can make it so if you have a no trade clause, it's only five teams you can't be traded to, or 10.
A limit of teams
like a limited amount. Like the
Canadian teams won't want that because you know they'll dominate.
You get a chance at least, right? Like
Winnipeg
you get a fighting chance.
Fight against that.
It's the no move clauses to me that are just that those are insane. Like a guy like Kevin Bieksa to get a no move clause and is basically just locked into you for eternity.
But that's my prime example. That is a prime example of a guy who probably had some options. And the difference was, I will come.
Oh, yeah.
I will come there if you promise that I can stay there, and then hence the no move. And now they regret it, of course. But like that's a prime example of a player who probably doesn't deserve one. But I bet you the difference in what his decision was that no move.
How did Stewie ever get one?
The no trade.
14 team no trade.
Interesting stuff. Hey, Mike, we appreciate the call on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, by all means, please do so. Lots to get to on the Boss Pizza fan line. Of course, don't forget about you can text us now at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Winnipeg's Jets schedule is out as well. And, of course, everybody was looking for the first Vegas date is in November 10th in Sin City, and they are in Dallas on the 6th. And Paul Edmonds posed the question yesterday, because he'll be on the road trip as the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290. Normally you leave right after the game and go to the next city. I wonder if the team will be staying in Dallas for a few days instead of going to Vegas on the 6th and then spending the 7th.
You think?
The 8th,
yeah.
The 9th, and the 10th in Vegas.
Good luck with that one.
I also just found, I might have had the answer to your question there, Troy. Apparently Daryl Sittler had one in the 70s with Toronto.
Hmm.
To avoid being traded from Punch Imlach because they had a bad relationship.
Oh.
So apparently it goes back far, much, much farther than that. And also all the Howes did too when they joined the Whalers in the WHA.
Which is interesting because that's before guaranteed contracts.
Mm-hmm.
You would think. I mean, I suppose once like I know, yeah. I think Dunnigan's contract when he came in, the CFO was guaranteed. But so early on, you could have scattered guaranteed contracts, but certainly it wasn't across the board. Like that is one of the most remarkable things ever. It still just blows me away that all the boys across the table get a guaranteed contract.
This is interesting from David Pagnotta of the Fourth Period, a great guest of us here on the Big Show and TSN 1290. Amid all the trade talk going on right now, a quick note, players who participated in the World Cup and the All-Star Game still haven't been paid their winnings.
Hmm.
So the Team Canada World Cup winners still haven't been paid their winnings, and the players that went to the All-Star Game still haven't been paid.
I wonder when they expected to get paid.
Yeah, I don't know if that's news, but I would suspect that you win the World Cup, and within a month you should get the pay. And I would think the All-Star game, too. Interesting. That's from David Pagnotta. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show. Who's next?
We'll go to Norm, then.
Norm, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks.
It's a Friday, at least. We can enjoy the evening. It's going to be, I think, a great great night to be watching TV tonight.
Yeah. Some sunshine, don't we?
Yeah. Well, it would be nice, yes. But we can't have everything, I guess. But I hope the Jets, they pick up a good defenseman. Like, I agree with one of the last callers there. The goalie, they could probably wait for a free agency to come in. But I think now is the time that we should try to, and Chevy's probably working at it, to get a really good left side D. I don't know who it would be. I hope he's got somebody in mind. And I agree that it probably wasn't a thought that they were probably trying to get in that deal there. And he would have fitted in really good, too, but they got to keep going. They got to keep persevering, and I think they'll find somebody. But I think if they wait too long, it might be a detriment. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't think they're waiting, and that's the one thing I've always said, that the whole idea that just because Kevin Cheveldayoff hasn't made a bunch of moves that he's not trying, to me, is two different things. Like, I tried like mad to get a date in high school, and I never got one. Doesn't mean I wasn't trying, and I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff isn't trying, and I think that's why he was a little bit more open yesterday with the media and on TSN 1290 about we had these things in the work and contractually they didn't work out. There's just so many, like, we're just talking about the no trades. Being the number one team put on no trade list does not help you when you're trying to make things happen. And it probably begins and ends with, before we go any further down this road, let me ask the player, or you contact the agent, and the player and the agent say no. then it probably stops right there.
Be real tough, yeah, real tough.
But it'll be interesting to see what they do for sure, Norman. I mean, that being said, the time is now, and you have the assets, and that's the job. You got to somehow make something work to get somebody to augment what you need. We'll take a break, take more of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line when we come back, 780-1290 on The Big Show.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Just got a tweet from Kyle Calder. He put together a list of could, should, left-handed D-men from around the league. On it are Hampus Lindholm, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, doesn't see a fit from anybody in Boston, Nathan Beaulieu, of course now with Buffalo, Zach Rowinski, it goes on and on, touches on a Calgary as well. But Noah Hanifin stands out to me in Carolina, 20 years old, has a cap hit of $925,000 and a year left on that. Getting back to our Trouba discussion and the fact that there's probably not a guy his age, equal value, left-hand side, would you trade Trouba for Noah Hanifin? And you'd be gaining the youth, the contract, probably not quite where Trouba is right now, but predictions being what they are. Would you do that deal?
Well, this isn't a new notion, right? This is one of the names that came up early in the process. And when you're looking at it, you got to remember he is only 20 years old. So I guess so long as he's willing to come here, he's an American guy. You don't know how he would feel about coming here. You're going to get the same thing with Trouba. I suppose if you're forced into a situation, and right now he's got 1 year left on his entry level, then RFA next year. Yeah, certainly from a what he brings to the table standpoint, it's pretty close to being an equal type of a thing. That you just kind of wonder, you know, is Noah Hanifin coming here? Is he a guy that you could sign long term eventually once he gets a little bit further along as well? But from a talent and standpoint, like as far as getting back what you're sending that way as a 20-year-old kid right now in Noah Hanifin, yeah, I think most people would entertain that.
I think that's about as good as you're going to get probably. If you're the Jets, right? Like that's a pretty good deal if Trouba does officially want out and you're kind of forced to make a move for him. I kind of like Jakob Slavin a little bit better than Hanifin, but it does sound like out of Carolina that Hanifin's the guy that they'd be more willing to move. But then again, you wonder from Carolina's perspective, why would they trade a defenseman for another defenseman?
I was just going to say, why would you just get older and bigger contract woes than you would if you have Hanifin? Like, why would you make that deal?
Well, if you need, both Hanifin and Slavin are left, so I don't know how overloaded they are with left.
They have a few, but it's not Jets bad.
Yeah, but if they could use a right-handed guy, so maybe that's, and maybe you got to spice it up a little bit, right? It's hard to see the Jets coming out in a break-even with this one, if it is that Trouba wants out, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be tough.
TSN 1290 is excited to return to Cinnaboy Downs for another Jocks and Jockeys Night Wednesday, July the 5th, including dinner, a betting seminar, pop, free wager, prizes, and the whole thing is hosted by us and the rest of the TSN 1290 crew. The only catch is you have to win your way in. Keep listening for your chance to win invites, including right now. If you want more info, you can go to tsn1290.ca, or you can be the 12th caller through, and we'll give you four invites to Jocks and Jockeys Night, July the 5th at Assiniboia Downs with us and the TSN 1290 crew. 12th caller through 780-1290. Going to be a very interesting weekend. Lots to talk about on Monday when the Big Show is back. Of course, Rick Ralph is in at 11 with the Don Vito Roundtable. And then 3 p.m. this afternoon, the afternoon ride with Husser and Paul Edmonds live from Chicago takes you into the draft coverage tonight starting at 6 and all day tomorrow from 2 till 7. And once again, we'll be back on the Big Show to break it all down for you on Monday. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for all the calls, tweets, and for listening throughout the week. Have a great weekend, everybody. And we'll be back Monday morning at 6 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.